Show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Pycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! You know, it's been a long time since I ate a Fundy for dinner. That was fun. I apologize to Mark in advance. I shouldn't have let it go that way. But, you know, he's a mean, hateful, spiteful little bastard. Not Mark, the other guy. And mean, hateful, and spiteful is usually not used to having mean, hateful, and spiteful thrown back at him. And he ran away. That's what cowards do, brothers and sisters. And how apropos it is that we did this, that Mark did this evening. Not we, but Mark. How apropos that he scheduled this for this evening, because, of course, brothers and sisters, you know this isn't just Wednesday. You know this isn't just hump day. You know this isn't just downhill to Friday. Hallelujah! No! Brethren and sistren, this is prayer meeting Wednesday on the horn. Choirmaster! Would you get us started with the offertory hymn?
Ladies and gentlemen, in the name of the Father, the Son, and the Holy Spirit, let me hear you say, Amen.
Amen.
Let me hear you say, Praise the Lord.
Praise the Lord.
Let me hear you say, I will empty the contents of my wallet into that little collection plate when it comes around. And it's all tax-free. Hallelujah! Praise the Lord for all the cash I've got. Praise Him for my Rolls Royce and my yacht. Serving God ain't hard with a credit card. Jesus died so I could make a lot. Praise the Lord, He's made us millionaires. Wave your donations in the air. We've replaced our hymns with ATMs, and soon we'll charge a fee on every prayer. Jesus Christ was a poor man, don't you know? He should have used our accountants for his cash flow. Stop the Sermon on the Mount, he should have had a bank account. 2,000 years with interest, he'd be rolling in the dough. Praise the Lord, this song's out on CD, just $40.95 plus GST. Hallelujah, plenty of moolah, solid gold baubles on my Christmas tree. I've got all of heaven's riches.
Sing it.
Thanks to all you stupid bitches. Praise the Lord for modern Christianity. Whoever said religion should be free?
What am I talking about?
Jesus.
I can't hear you.
Jesus.
I still can't hear you.
Jesus
Christ our Lord. Do you know His name?
Hallelujah.
Have you seen His glory? Have you felt the warming comfort of His precious love? Praise Jesus. Praise His holy name. Praise His blessed spirit. Praise His everlasting love. Jesus Christ our Lord. Listen to me now.
Hallelujah, brethren and sistren, come on down the blood-red carpet and lay your hands upon the subwoofer and feel the healing rays, the common sense flowing through you. Ha! Glory! This is Prayer Meeting Wednesday. I am Archbishop Cardinal Pope Bob Kincaid, and this is the Cathedral of Common Sense. Hallelujah! Praise Jeebus! Ha! Whew! That feels good. Mark Levine is with us just about now. And first of all, like I said, I owe Mark an apology. Mark, I'm sorry I let the demon out of his box, but I haven't eaten. I haven't had one of those hate-filled little bastards for dinner in so long. Yum, yum, yum. Delicious with sweet taters.
You know how hard it was for me to be nice to him? I'm like, okay, gay. I think we had different styles there, but I think that he shows his own hatred better. I mean, you finished him off, but I think just by asking open-ended questions, finally at one point he said to me, well, let's not argue about the law.
I thought I was going to come out of my shoes when he said that.
Yeah, I didn't go out. I should have mentioned more Jews. I didn't go there. But obviously he thinks Jews are going to hell because, he thinks Oprah Winfrey is going to hell.
The president of the Southern Baptist Convention is going to hell in that weird little freak's mind. I mean, it's going to be like that old joke, okay, about the new group of people that go to heaven and they're standing there at the pearly gates and they get admitted and St. Peter's showing them around and he says, over there's the Episcopalians, and the newbies say, hey, and the Episcopalians say, hey, and he says, and over there, there's your Presbyterians, and the newbies go, hey, and the Presbyterians go, hey, and over there's your Buddhists, and the Buddhists go, om, and the newbies go, hey, and he says, and over there's Pastor Keller, and the newbies get ready to go, and he grabs their arm and puts them down, and St. Peter says, shh, he thinks he's the only one up here. So, I mean, yeah, he is. I mean, these people are so toxic. See, and it's frustrating, Mark, dealing with them because it's like, I don't know, it's like talking to a paramecium. They have no ability to comprehend.
But see, my goal was obviously not to persuade him. My goal was to show how idiotic his arguments were. And I took him piece by piece through it. I mean, he went through and finally had to agree with me that the law did nothing to harm him, but he was afraid it would be misused. He was afraid that people would go outside the law and harm him. Well, if people are going to go outside the law and keep him from preaching, then he doesn't need to worry about this law, does he?
Well, and the fact of the matter is, when he came around, yeah, but what they're doing in Canada and Finland, sweet Jesus! You know, I can't remember, hockey something, H-A-K-K-E. I'll bet you our buddy Scott in Stockholm knows who this creep is. He's the Swedish version of Fred Phelps.
Okay.
And he stands in the pulpit every day, or stood in the pulpit till he went to prison, screaming damnation and hate and urging violence on people for being homosexual. And the Swedish, and you know, the Swedish are real, real civilized. They got us beat by a mile on being civilized. I mean, when you talk about personal space among Swedes, you know, if you're within 15 feet of another Swede, you're violating their personal space. And they take it very, very seriously. So when they got somebody out there in the pulpit trying to whip people up into a frenzy to go out and kill people, they put him on trial.
Right.
Because it is, because, and the thing is, Mark, it's not different. They did it under a theory that's no different from yelling movie in a crowded firehouse.
Well, inciting a riot is still a crime.
Yes.
So, frankly, it's one that I'm worried about because I actually do defend the right of hateful people to speak in America. I think that it's better to have cockroaches scurrying in the light than scurrying in the darkness. And so, I actually would defend Pastor Keller's right to preach hate against me personally. I think he has a right to do it.
Now, well, just right remember, it was Jewish lawyers from the ACLU who defended the Nazis in Skokie.
That's right. Who defended their right to march. And the sad thing is that he kind of got it. He kind of had to admit. Did you notice that every time I asked him, do you see a difference between a murder and a lynching? He changed the subject. And I asked him again, do you see a difference between a murder and a lynching? He changed the subject. Do you see a difference between burning a couple of logs and burning a cross? He changed the subject. The gay activist. Every time I asked him a really tough question.
I want to know who these radical homosexual activists are and how do they manifest their radicalness.
They're you and me, Bob.
Well,
you than me, honestly.
Well, you'll have to send me a copy of the agenda and the handbook and the certificate suitable for framing because, you know, this man is an arbiter of sexuality and he done declared me to be gay.
Well, and he did declare you to be gay, because you know what? You can't stand up for gay rights unless you're gay. For the same thing, you can't stand up for African-Americans unless you're African-American. You can't stand up for Jews unless you're Jewish. You can't stand up for Christians unless you're Christian.
Yeah, at the risk of being insensitive, I'm not going to apply with your side. I'm going to apply with the lesbian coalition and just be a male lesbian.
Well, you like women.
Right. I'm a male lesbian.
You might not like the castration, though.
Ew! Now, they're going to get you for that, not me.
What?
What's that you're talking about, Mark?
Oh,
Jesus, that sounded like Mickey Mouse.
I had him on a long leash, but you bit off the leash. But I know you enjoyed that, Bob, and I didn't want to take your enjoyment from you. I tried to sort of end it but you came right back on.
Well, no. Well, when he called me gay, I mean, I'm a mean old redneck, and you know, I don't take that to be a slur. But I wanted it understood that he was trying to slur.
But that's the point. That's the point. He doesn't think you can stick up for a fellow American unless you're of that ilk.
Well, and you nailed it on the dismount, Nadia Comaneci. You did. I'm not standing up for gay people. You're not standing up for gay people. You're standing up for your fellow Americans.
Exactly.
But see, in his twisted, sick, little fundamentalist, evangelical world, just like Appalachians aren't as American as the rest of the country, so it's okay to do to us what gets done to us, gay people aren't as American as the rest of the country. Atheists aren't as American as a fundamentalist. And that's the thing. They see their world, their hate-filled, narrow, little, bigoted, spider-infested, just filth-crusted world, they see it shrinking, Mark, and it is scaring them to the point that their bowels are running water.
And speaking of that shrinkage, it should be announced, if people don't know it, that Maine has just become the fifth state to allow full marriage equality for all its citizens, straight and gay. It happened in the hour as we were speaking. And that just makes Bill Keller's heart must just be exploding right now. His brain must be fried. Because while he was arguing against some law that doesn't even harm him, Maine went ahead and allowed gay people to marry.
You're sort of close to across the river home has done up and said that they're going to recognize other people's done gay marriages.
I've been working on that, actually. In fact, folks, if you want to look in the Washington Post, as of yesterday, I, yours truly, Mark Levine, I am quoted in an article about that. It's on the V1, the front page of the local section, where I point out that you can't have a referendum after the city council passes the law because D.C. has a code. It's not like a state where they have the right to have their own rights. There's no D.C. is the nation's last colony, but D.C. does have a constitution of a sort, and it's called the Human Rights Act. It's the D.C. Bill of Rights, and it says you cannot discriminate on the basis of race, color, sex, or sexual orientation, and you cannot have a referendum that would bring in discrimination. So once D.C. allows marriage equality, and we have to get it through, Congress has to do nothing, but once we get it past Congress, there cannot be a referendum. They can't do what they did with Proposition 8 in California. A majority of citizens cannot take away someone's civil rights. And I was quoted on that in the Washington Post as of yesterday, and just bragging a little. Look it up. You'll see my name there.
Oh, very, very cool. You're somebody now. Did it say Mark Levine, host of the Radio Inside Scoop with Mark Levine on the HeadOnRadioNetwork.com?
You know what? I gave them all that information, and all I got was attorney Mark Levine.
Rats.
I did give them all that, though.
Yeah, well, I don't doubt that you did. It's just, it's the, look, it's the for-profit media. They don't, they want to keep, they're just another case of the for-profit media keeping us down, Mark.
But I did, yeah, obviously it's because of this it's because of this law, Bob. I love it when I talk about hate crimes law and he says, and you know what, this Muslim group asked that I get kicked off the air. And I'm like, okay, what does that have to do with hate crimes? And people are condemning Miss California. Okay, but I thought you agreed with free speech, Pastor Keller. See, he doesn't like...
Well, he agrees with his free speech, Mark. That's why he's an ugly little fascist.
He doesn't want free speech when other people like him.
Right. The only speech is his free speech.
Exactly.
And see, there are so many fallacies, and Vince is back with us, and I want to bring him on just in a minute. But I just want to cover a little bit of ground with you real quick.
Sure.
First of all, you know, I think my argument about because they keep it's so funny because these bigots and homophobes are using the same argument as the flippin' NRA. Okay? Because anytime you talk about bringing up a gun law, the NRA says, "We got enough laws already. What we got to do is enforce the ones we have."
Right.
Okay? Well, that's what he just said. But the problem is, we got all kinds of gun laws on the books, but it didn't stop a bigoted homophobic freak from going into a Unitarian Universalist church in Tennessee, and because he'd written a manifesto that said he was going to blow away the homos and the people who enable them and all the Democrats and liberals.
Nor did it stop a mentally ill student at Virginia Tech from massacring well, innocent people, even though there's a law that says that mentally ill people shouldn't get guns. Because you know what? There's a gun show loophole in that law that says we're not going to check to see if you're mentally ill if you go to a gun show. And then you say to the gun people, well, let's just...
That's because nobody going through the door could pass the test. I mean, yeah, those gun shows are real. You know, I mean, crazy people. You ever been to one? Probably not. I mean, there ought to be a truck with straight. There ought to be a truck with straight jackets and purple crayons to tuck between people's toes in the padded cell outside the exit. I mean, they're not. I mean, people standing around and stroking guns like they're masturbating. Oh, it's weird.
Yeah, that's really scary.
And, you know, this guy's argument falls apart on so many levels. You know, what I did bring up to him, and he doesn't care. He's just tickled probably to death about it.
The thing that interested me, you know, I mean, you know, I argue people who disagree with me all the time. I, you know, listeners of the Horn, hate it or love it, but I bring Mike Lane on all the time. And he and I disagree on a million different things.
I've come to look forward to Mike Lane like my weekly dose of castor oil.
I was going to say, like, your trip to the dentist every 6 months. But the thing about this pastor is that I logically showed how he was wrong on the law. I logically showed how there was a difference between a hate crime and an ordinary crime of violence. And he had to concede that I was right on the law. He had to concede there was a difference. And then he, instead of responding, he simply said, I'm afraid that 1 year from now all hell will break loose. If this law, which says it doesn't harm me, will be used somehow to harm me. And I said, well, you know, Pastor, we'll bring you on in a year. We'll see if it actually harms you. At least Mike would, you know, comes back at me with something. This guy had nothing except the radical homosexual activists. He had nothing but hate.
Yeah, all those radical homosexuals walking around with their toasters and their wall sconces and curtain valances and
that's right.
Geez, you know.
Watch out, or they will redecorate your house. You lock your door.
Yeah, right. Radical homosexual redecorating.
I've been in your house. I know what it looks like.
It's a very tastefully decorated place.
They're going to go in and they're going to give you culture, whether you like it or not. They're going to tell you that your shoes are all wrong. Gay people are dangerous.
Well, see, he had the nerve, and there's just not time enough, and it's you know, talking with one of these people is like juggling snakes anyway. But he had the nerve to bring up that homophobic little twit from California. Now, here's a woman who is, you know, and they've went out and found the dirty pictures that she had taken of her. Well, Pastor, why'd she have the dirty pictures? It's before she was saved. Like, geez. Because, you know, the pageant industry is the pageant industry, all right?
Right.
And it is an industry.
I don't look to Miss America for my moral values.
Now, here's this beauty pageant queen whose life has been beauty pageants, you know, a little JonBenet right. that actually got to grow up.
Talk about being judged solely.
Now, her hair is styled by a gay guy. Her makeup is done by a gay guy. Her flute lessons were given by a gay guy. Her gown was designed by a gay guy. Her movement and dance was choreographed by a gay guy. But, well, I just want them all for myself, because if they get married, they might not want to make me beautiful no more.
Oh, God.
You know, I mean, really, I guess that's an overbroad stereotype, and if I've offended anybody, I apologize.
Bob, the guy that cuts my hair happens to be straight, and it's not his fault. Okay?
No, it's not.
So,
and you know what? He talks about homosexual perversion. You know, I don't want to see him a-rutting around on May Eller neither. Because that's, I mean, you know, see, but I'm one of those weirdos that don't get into porn. I don't like watching anybody. I don't want a mirror in my room.
Well, Bob, some of us have... I'm stopping there.
Yeah, I thought I had you. I thought I was going
to... I started to say something not very nice. I stopped myself.
That's okay. I've got people thinking about me having sex now, and their eyes are burning out from the backs of their brains.
And that is a hate crime.
Yeah, it is. I mean, the Ferg's over here answering the phones and getting a complex. But anyway, let me raise one more issue before we bring Vince on, okay?
Sure, go ahead.
And that issue is this. The one place, and I mentioned this in the context of the we just need to enforce the laws we got and prosecute them to the fullest extent of the law. And I sent you a little private note during the course of the conversation. If he wants to prosecute to the fullest extent of the law, then that means that the law must contemplate the fullest extent of the crime.
Exactly. Well, I pointed out to him the difference between drunk driving and first-degree murder. You kill someone either way, but the law sees them as different crimes. If you don't see the difference between killing someone because you hate them and a lynching, if you don't see the difference between burning a couple logs and burning a cross, if you don't see the difference between kids getting in a schoolyard fight, which kids do all the time, and shouting the F word and the N word, which I actually said on the broadcast, I don't think I have before, but I wanted him to hear the hatred in those words. You know, if you don't see it, then you're either blind or you're intentionally blind.
It's and you know, because one of the arguments that they like to make, Mark, is, well, nobody can tell what was going on in a person's mind when they committed the crime.
Well, yeah, when they're shouting what's going on in their mind, you can tell.
Well, Mark, you know, that puts the lie to everything that you spent 3 years in law school learning.
Exactly.
Because mens rea in the criminal law and the question of intent in the criminal law, we have what are called specific intent crimes.
And you have to prove them beyond a reasonable doubt.
I mean, in West
it's
Virginia...
It's all part of the law. If
right,
you can't prove it beyond a reasonable doubt...
In West Virginia, for instance, something as simple as, you know, larceny, you know, stealing.
Yeah,
you have to prove that someone stole, took, or carried away the goods, goods, valuables, or services of another with the intent to deprive the true owner thereof.
Exactly.
And you never get somebody on the stand who says, yeah, that was my intent, and you can't pick up, you know, there's no physical, tangible evidence of intent. You have to infer the intent from the circumstances of the actions.
If a woman's in a restaurant and she picks up a black purse and she takes it home and it's not hers and she thought it was hers, it's not larceny.
She did not have the intent to deprive the true owner thereof.
Exactly. Even though she stole the purse. I mean, she took the purse and it wasn't hers. Sorry, you also have to show what was in her mind.
You know, it's why there's a crime on the books in this and many other states called joyriding. Because as long as there are the troublemaking little teenagers out there, there are going to be troublemaking little teenagers who grab the keys to somebody's car and go out and take it for a spin and leave it somewhere. Now, that is not grand larceny, because there's no manifestation of a mental intent to deprive the true owner. What you have is the intent to drive somebody's car around for a while.
Which is why it's a misdemeanor and not a felony.
Bingo. So, you know, all of these right-wing fallacies, this is the kind of talking points that get ginned up in these wildly well-funded right-wing think tanks, and they come out and they look good on a bumper sticker. You can't read a person's mind. No, but the law has deemed itself competent to determine intent from virtually the very beginnings of Anglo-Saxon law.
The difference between first-degree murder, which will give you the death penalty, and second-degree murder, which never gives you the death penalty, is premeditatedness. It is specifically getting into someone's mind and determining whether or not they plan to kill this person or whether they just did it in the heat of the moment. And all the time, people are killed, are executed under the death penalty because juries find beyond a reasonable doubt that someone committed premeditated murder. How do they do that? Do they ask the person? Well, the person denies it or pleads the fifth. No, they look at the circumstantial evidence, and they make a determination. And it happens every day, and people
right,
die.
Because first-degree murder is premeditation, which is, you know, I guess the phrase that is many people would use is cold-blooded murder. Okay?
Like planning in advance rather
right.
than doing it on the spot.
And whereas then there's second-degree murder, which is commonly defined as heat-of-passion murder. In which, you know, guy comes home, finds his wife in bed, romping with the pastor, and blows them both away. He wasn't insane. He's not guilty by reason of insanity, but the blood was so hot that he could not stop himself. And we say, okay, mister, we're going to put you in prison, but we're not going to kill you for this one.
Right.
So, you know, the argument is so fallacious.
He knows that.
Of course he does. But there's money in this for him.
Home, he changed the subject. Did you notice that every time I made a good point, he didn't answer the point, he changed the subject and started talking about the radical homosexual agenda. As if he thought no one would notice.
You know, just out there discoing in the streets. I don't know. Yeah, the radical. I'm still stumped by that one. You know, Peter was supposed to send me a copy of the Radical Homosexual Agenda a while back. You've never come through on it.
It's similar to the Radical Black Agenda. Blacks, gay people.
Oh, shalom aleichem, brother.
Women and Jews and Latinos and disabled people. They all want, get this, they actually want equal rights under the law. Can you believe that?
That is some kind of radical agenda.
If they were American or something. As if they were citizens with the same constitutional rights as a straight white male owning Christian with property.
Bunch of nerve. And we are going to bring Vince on in a second, but I got to share one more thing with you before we go. And that is Ephesians chapter 5, or chapter 6, 5 through 9. That's where St. Paul, you know, this freak was saying, you know, the Bible says man and women, God, all were created equal. No, it doesn't. That's the Declaration of Independence.
Yes.
And that rose out of the Enlightenment, not out of the Bible, because there's nothing about the equivalent, the equality of human beings in the Bible. However, if you do go to Ephesians chapter 6, verses 5 through 9, you will find Paul, St. Paul, Saul, on the run, whatever he was, insane tent fume huffer, I don't know. You'll find him tacitly, explicitly condoning and stating that slavery is a natural condition of existence.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But to be clear, not all the Bible is messed up like that. There is love thy neighbor as thyself.
And the dude that said that got killed for it.
Well, I know. Look, there's all kinds of stuff in the Bible. I'm just not going to say it's all bad. It's some good, some bad. I'm not going to.
You know, I was chewing on the feller's hide at the moment. But he did not have a response when I said, look, Jesus never said anything about homosexuality. Because he doesn't. That's all left to that psychotic the leather-treating huffer, St. Paul, and all of that bizarre business back in Deuteronomicus about thou shalt not put on the garment of a woman, nor lie with a she-goat, nor a he-goat on days that end in Y, or eat shellfish.
Right.
And the funny thing is, all those, and you know this better than I do, Mark, all of those Old Testament laws, every last one of them has an enhanced penalty based upon the state of the mind of the person doing it. For instance, the state of mind of a disobedient child. A disobedient child is to be taken outside the city gates and stoned to death.
That's true.
And that's based on his state of mind. And this guy is okay with all of that. Wow. Hey, let's do bring Vince on, okay?
Yeah, we've kept him out for a while.
Hey, Vince, again, sorry you had to wait.
No, it's okay. Interesting conversation. You guys pretty much touched on everything I wanted to bring up, although I do want to bring up one other thing, and this is that whole it's a choice argument.
Oy.
Bulk pucky that he was bringing up. Let me ask you something. People get hanged for this. People get beat up, ridiculed, and treated like they are less than human in this. People are outcast from society for this. There was a piece on NPR this afternoon where this guy who, for whatever reason, was a member or wanted to be he was part of Bush's election campaign and then was trying to get a job as a member of his administration. He was outed as a gay person, and that cost him his job as a result of that. What sane person with full capacity of their brain is going to choose this?
Right, and he had no answer except to say, well, you don't choose to be normal. And that's one of those Peter Godbold moments, Vince, when I said, normal's a setting on a dryer.
You know what, though, but I would think...
Normal is simply an average of a range of behaviors, and as behaviors change over time, so does normal. And, you know, just as nowadays it is considered normal for a black person to be married to a white woman, or a black woman to be married to a white man, give it about another 100 years, these fossils will have died off, and gay people will be considered normal as well.
It won't be 100 years.
The downside about that is I'll be dead by the time that happens.
No, I don't think so. 20 years. 20 years. Okay. Maine is – look at the states right now, right? We've had, what, 3 states in a year? Maine is our 5th state. We will have it throughout the entire United States, mark my words, by 2023. And that's a very particular date, and I'll tell you how I chose that date. 2023 is 19 years after the first state, Massachusetts, allows – gay people to marry, specifically said that laws prohibiting gay couples from marrying are unconstitutional. In 1948, the very first state, California, declared its laws against miscegenation, race mixing, laws banning interracial marriage, were unconstitutional. After that, it took 19 years, state by state by state, until finally the U.S. Supreme Court in 1967 said, all right, all laws banning interracial marriage are unconstitutional. It took 19 years. I'm following that model. And I think you will find by 2023, it's in every state in the United States. I think it'll be in the majority of states in the United States by 2015, possibly sooner. So it won't be 100 years, Vince. It won't be.
It might be less than that, because the lesson of the civil rights movement may be instructive enough to shorten that span of time. Because, you know, how long has gay marriage been going on in Massachusetts now?
Just 5 years.
Right, and has anybody taken a look at the divorce rate in Massachusetts?
Yeah, I'm sure it's the same as it was before.
Yeah. Now, meanwhile, you can't have gay marriage in Alabama, and the divorce rate is climbing.
Yeah.
You know, I can tell you what causes divorce. You know, when you have an economy going the way it is, where people can't put, you know, food on your family, and, you know, you got mothers who can't spend any time with their husbands and their children because they're having to work 2, 3, 4, 5 jobs. You know, that sort of crap is what causes marriage to collapse. That's the threat. That's the threat to the institution of marriage. And these morons don't even want to pay any attention to that.
Hey, Vince, have you ever seen my video, Ban Left-Handed Marriage? Let me invite you and everyone else listening. It's terrific. Go to YouTube, not during Bob's show, but when Bob's show is over. Go to YouTube.com, type in Ban Left. And you will see my fervent pitch to ban left-handed marriage. And in there I argue that left-handed people are not normal because, let's face it, 90% of people are right-handed. And left-handed is sinister, according to Shakespeare. And I give all the arguments
or the Latin language
against gay people. I make them against left-handed people. Because, after all, normal, if normal means what the majority does, then, you know, left-handed people, which includes, unfortunately, our president, are just going to have to get divorced. It's funny because I did it. I tried to maintain a straight face. I pretty much do the whole time. And what's really funny is watching the people who comment on YouTube, because the majority realizes it's satire, and a hefty minority wants to know why I'm attacking left-handed people.
Vince, I had to take phone calls. I had to field phone calls here. I thought he was a liberal. Why is he hating me? I'm left-handed. Oy. It's satire. It's satire.
It was a great call because I actually had a guy call in who opposed the right of gay people to marry, but he couldn't understand why I was so up in arms against left-handed people. But that's what happens. I mean, left-handed people, let's face it, for years were discriminated against. My own grandfather, by the way, who had the orientation to favor his left hand, was forced against his will in New Orleans, Louisiana, when he grew up, to use his right hand. And to the day he died, he would write with his right hand and do everything else favoring his left.
Well, see, that's what he gets for making that choice, Mark.
Well, he's an ex-lefty, and it proves that he could be saved. So, you know, that was the argument. It's very clear. People say it's a choice, but we all know. I mean, people say it's an orientation, that people favor left-handed because of some kind of genetic thing. We all know it's a choice. All those left-handers are choosing to, and they're doing it because they hate America. That's why they're choosing.
Well, I'd
laugh more if these people didn't actually think this way.
Well, the other thing, though, I want to be careful on is this whole choice argument, because it wouldn't matter if it is a choice. It's not, but so what if it is? Look, for bisexual people, it is a choice, right? And they have the right to choose who they want to love. I don't care if a bisexual person chooses to marry a man or a woman. It ain't my business. So one of the problems with the choice argument is you have to be careful because people have the right to make choices, too. I'm pro-choice. And so whether it's a bisexual person, look, people choose their religion, right? You're not, I mean, yeah, you're often born with it, but you often choose your religion. But that doesn't mean that we can discriminate and persecute people on the basis of their religion. So one of the things about the choice argument is it's kind of a red herring. Although it's not a choice, it wouldn't matter whether it is or it isn't. We don't want to prosecute people for making choices that don't harm anybody else. So I just want to make that clear.
That's a very good point as well. I mean, you know, like I said, who in God's name would choose this when you've got all these negative consequences that come with it? What person in their right mind is going to sit there and choose it? It's stupid, you know. Either way you try and slice it, any way you try and look at it, it's just a stupid argument. And it's made by a bigoted, dumb moron who can't see past his own,
Well, but don't sell him short, because this man makes a very, and I think, Mark, you being the trained economist student that you are, might agree with this. Everything is economics. You know, war is economics at the point of a gun, at the muzzle of a gun. But at any rate, this is economics. This isn't religion. This isn't lifestyle. This isn't culture. This isn't politics. This is economics, because this guy has carved out a very nice little niche for himself in which he makes a very nice little living for himself out of going around spewing hate. Hate is profitable in this country, sad to say.
Oh, look, he's a Rush Limbaugh wannabe.
Oh no! He's actually a fairly big person. He's got 2.4 million listeners, and he's gone on all the. I mean, he's somebody who I've actually looked at his website now because I want to see if he commented on what happened today. I don't think he will, because I don't think he wants to give any. I don't think he wants to let anyone know about the horn or that we exist or that, because he doesn't want to draw anyone to the attention of the show where he
schooled his butt.
An idiot. So I don't think he'll mention it, but I am curious to see if he will. And apparently he's on a bunch of different sites and everything.
Yeah. Vince, good to hear from you, brother.
Absolutely, man. I'll talk to you later.
All right. See ya. And, Mark, the other thing, you know, I did bring up to this guy in the course of my little piece of theater of the mind, the name of Carl Joseph Walker Hoover. I can't get this young man out of my head. Photograph of a beautiful, beautiful little 11-year-old boy that I'm looking at right now. His mama went to the school day after day, week after week, month after month, begging school authorities to stop the bullying of her children. Mm-hmm. Classmates who constantly called him various and sundry epithets, not racial epithets, he's a young African-American man, mm-hmm. but sexual epithets, accused him of being gay. 11 years old, you don't have sexuality when you're 11. But day after day, they accused him of being gay, and one day he went in and hanged himself. Nobody ever, you know, it was just bullying. That's all it was. Sticks and stones can break my bones, but words can never hurt me. They killed Carl Joseph Walker Hoover. And you know what? The blood, as a facilitator and an enabler of that, the blood is on the Reverend's hands.
Sure.
Just like the blood is on O'Reilly's and Hannity's and Michael Savage's hands for the people who were killed in the Tennessee Valley Unitarian Universalist Church. I will not stop talking about that, Mark. I will not let that be forgotten. Because that, and you know, right-wing radio is living proof that we're not going to punish this kind of stuff. The Adkisson, who did that murder in Tennessee, wrote a full confession that was supposed to be read after he had committed suicide by cop. Because he figured that the lily-livered liberals would just stand there and shake in liberal horror while he blew them all away. The man had hundreds of rounds of ammunition. But they took him down, and he lived. And by the way, the prosecutor is not seeking the death penalty, did not seek the death penalty, because, you know, you can't be out there subjecting right-wing, hate-mongering mass murderers to the death penalty, just like Eric Rudolph, the George W. Bush administration, did not seek the death penalty for a man who deliberately attacked people at women's health care clinics because God told him to.
Right.
But you know what? In the case of Adkisson, there was a full confession, Mark. And he explained how it was that he got the idea to go in and blow away those people simply trying to attend a children's play. And he said outright, Hannity told me to do it. O'Reilly told me to do it. Savage told me to do it. Has anybody arrested any of those? No. Not at all. So this guy's afraid that somebody's going to keep him from advocating hateful violence against people for being gay? He hasn't a leg to stand on, Mark.
And he knows it. That's what's so fascinating. He knows it. He absolutely knows it. That's why he, at one point, I mean, the classic end of it was when he said, well, let's not argue about the law. But you're coming on this program to oppose this law. Well, let's not argue about the law. Because he knew he was wrong.
Yeah, he did. But it doesn't matter. Because, you know, you said he's got 2.4 million listeners.
Yeah.
It's good business. There's big business in hate. It's poisonous, but it's terribly profitable.
I assure you, this is not his typical radio interview.
No, I think this will go down in the history of your archives, because it was a nice little.
Going to have nightmares tonight.
It was a nice little one too. Yeah, because I was sitting there. Well, see, that's the other thing. John Fox just forwarded along something to me, an article. This is the abstract on an article by H.E. Adams, L.W. Wright Jr., and B.A. Lohr of the Department of Psychology, University of Georgia at Athens. Okay.
Yeah.
See, I did that. I want to kiss you business because I know where the,
That's
I know
why he ran away.
Yeah, I know why this. I know what this man. I know what this man is. Now, this is what happened in the study at the University of Georgia. And this is very scientific. I'm not using this for prurient purposes or anything. This is just science. We do science. The authors investigated the role of homosexual arousal in exclusively heterosexual men who admitted negative affect toward homosexual individuals. Participants consisted of a group of homophobic men and a group of non-homophobic men. They were assigned to groups on the basis of their scores on the index of homophobia. The men were exposed to sexually explicit erotic stimuli consisting of heterosexual, male homosexual, and lesbian videotapes. And changes in penile circumference were monitored. They also completed an aggression questionnaire. Both groups exhibited increases in penile circumference to the heterosexual and female homosexual videos. Only the homophobic men showed an increase in penile erection to male homosexual stimuli. The groups did not differ in aggression. Homophobia is apparently associated with homosexual arousal that the homophobic individual is either unaware of or denies. In a couple of years...
Suppress.
What?
It's trying as much as possible to suppress. It's people who don't like themselves.
Well, you know, yeah, it's the closet is a poisonous place, Mark.
It extremely. Look at someone like Roy Cohn, McCarthy's guy, who to the day he died of AIDS hated gay people.
You know, and if he hadn't been such a loathsome individual, Larry Craig. You know, here's a guy who was so desperate for the human contact for which he is hardwired that he was willing to have anonymous sex in a bathroom with another man.
And the sad thing is that
it's
a
pathetic.
Lot of the really disgusting things that people attribute to gay people really are only closeted gay people, because if you can have a long-lasting relationship, a marriage, for example, or you can you're allowed in a private home to have, you know, your own sex life, you don't need to go to a public bathroom. But if you're married and if you are, you know, not allowed to marry someone who you're physically attracted to, and if your church tells you it's evil and you're afraid to bring someone to your home, that's when you're going to have sex in public bathrooms.
Right, and it's pathetic. And it would be more so
that's a good adjective. It's pathetic.
These lives are filled with pathos.
And were they
not so virulently and vigorously hate-filled in their own right, I would be able to manifest a lot more sympathy.
Well, you know, Bob, a lot of people that abuse others have been abused. A lot of domestic violence, for example, is caused by people whose fathers hit their mothers. And in no way does that justify the domestic violence, but it does help explain, if not justify. Listen, I'm all for putting domestic violence, you know, putting those people in jail and worse. But people who are around violence and hate often spread violence and hate. And it shows that it's not just that's the problem with violence and hate. It doesn't just harm the victim. This is the point I was making at the very beginning with Pastor Keller. People get in drunken bar fights all the time. Little kids on a playground, boys particularly, get in fights all the time. And you know what? 3 months later, if it was just two boys disagreeing on who owned the ball they brought to the field, they'll probably get over it and become best friends. But when you start shouting N-word and F-word, when you start shouting words of hate, that takes a simple assault and brings it to a much higher, darker, more evil level, which is why we need this hate crimes bill to begin with.
Well, this is...
Hate spreads like wildfire.
Sure it does. And the reason, you know, at the core of all bigotry lies fear.
I agree.
And...
fear of the other, fear of someone different, absolutely.
Or fear, no, personal fear. I mean, this is real existential fear, Mark, because what these right-wingers fear is what will be reality. You know, they are King Canute trying to hold back the tides, or whichever one it was that tried to hold back the tides. What they fear is that, for instance, we're 5 years in with gay marriage in Massachusetts. Not a single...
Call it marriage equality, Bob. I'm going to strike your semantics. Call it marriage equality.
I agree. No, right. Actually, we are 5 years into full equal rights in Massachusetts.
Exactly. Thank you.
Sorry for the euphemism. It just, you know, gets
That's
into...
That's okay. No, it's important.
But it is important. But anyway, there's, as I noted, there's no statistical referent by which you can point out any social harm arising to heterosexual marriages as they predicted would happen.
It's going to destroy heterosexual marriage.
There's nothing there. As I noted, divorce is on the rise in your Alabamas and your Louisianas and your Georgias and so forth. States of the old Confederacy where this kind of right-wing hate reigns supreme. And what these people fear on an existential level is that they themselves are going away. What we are hearing in the virulent, hate-filled postulating and posturing of Reverend Keller, and the fact that a man as blind as him would have a name like Keller, was not lost on me. What he fears is not that the nation will change for the worse. What he fears is that his hate will no longer be tolerated. And, I mean, he was manifesting that very clearly. If horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner is listening, I'm sure he can opine with a great deal of observation on this. But what he was manifesting to you, and he said it openly, was that he feared that he would be going away. Not going to prison, but rendered absolutely irrelevant. And for a vast segment of fundamentalist, evangelical, phony Christianity, among other things, full equality under the Constitution for all American citizens spells their death. It spells their death just the same as the Southern Christian Church, so-called, its death was spelled in the abolitionist movement. You know, I'm hard on Christianity for a reason, because it needs someone to be hard on it. But the abolitionist movement grew up in churches and journalism as well. But the pro-slavery movement had its roots almost exclusively in the church in the South, just like the anti-union movement had its roots here in Appalachia in the church where the coal companies paid the pastors to preach against unions. You know, I mentioned Ephesians 6, 5 through 9 a little bit ago. This is it. Now remember, Pastor Keller said that the church, that the Bible is the basis upon which we find the equality of human beings. All men are created equal. We know, as already noted, that's the Declaration of Independence, and it has a lot more to do with Hobbes, Locke, and Rousseau than Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John. But anyway.
And by slaveholder. But anyway, go ahead.
Well, this is Ephesians 6, 5 through 9. Slaves, be obedient to them that are your masters, according to the flesh, with fear and trembling, in singleness of your heart, as unto Christ. Not with eye service as men pleasers, but as the servants of Christ, doing the will of God from the heart, with good will doing service as to the Lord and not to men, knowing that whatsoever good thing any man doeth, the same shall he receive of the Lord, whether he be bond or free. And ye masters, do the same things unto them, forbearing, threatening, knowing that your master also is in heaven, neither is there respect of persons with him. So Paul is saying, hey, lots of slavery here on earth, and that's okay, but it all changes when we get pie in the sky when we die. But that line about with trembling, with fear and trembling in singleness of your heart as unto Christ. Paul is telling the early Christian church and slaves that were welcome in the early Christian church that as slaves, they are to treat their masters like God. And that's the source of human freedom? Well, I don't think so, Lucy.
You know, Bob, you mentioned that if we allow civil rights, if we allow full equality, it harms this pastor's business. It was interesting because when I asked for his examples of how this law or any other civil equality law that would harm him, he gave examples exactly of what you're talking about, of him being out of business. He gave example of an Islamic group trying to get him off of CBS. He gave an example of criticism. Oh, no, criticism of Miss California. Because apparently, beauty queens, if you criticize them, they melt away like witches do with water. His fear was exactly that.
I'm melting.
He would get less business. He would get less business. Nobody would listen to him anymore. His fear was not that he'd be arrested. His fear was that he would lose his business. It's a good point.
Yeah. It is not an observation idly made, Mark. You know, you and I had a conversation off air sometime back when I was asking you a good economics text. Because the more that I live where I live, the more that I realize that everything is economics. I mean, everything is economics. There's, and you know, maybe that's that whole, was it Hobbes or Locke that talked about enlightened self-interest? I can't remember. They all run together for me, Calvin and Hobbes. It's all a comic
story. That was Locke. Hobbes is Life is Nasty, Brutish, and Short.
Right, and yeah, Hobbes
is...
Which,
as a guy under 6 feet, I always took to be an attack on me personally, but never mind.
Yeah, Ferg's got my thing with the drum sound on it, so we have to...
Oh, is he giving me the rim shot there?
Yeah, I gave you the rim shot.
Hey, by the way, New Hampshire, both Senate and House have now passed a marriage equality bill. They're not sure yet whether the governor will sign it. But so Maine is the fifth state. I want you to think about this. A month ago, it was only Massachusetts and Connecticut because California had been. We're still not sure what's going to happen with California. The Supreme Court's going to come down soon on that. So it's just those two states. Since then, we've had Iowa and Vermont. Now Maine, New Hampshire is around the corner. Vince, I love Vince, but I don't think it's going to be 100 years, Vince.
No, I don't either.
It may not even be 20.
And to the extent that you cited California's shift and then Loving v. Virginia, I cannot help but note that while the abolitionist movement was actually born in Appalachia, it took root in the same place where full constitutional equality is taking place now. In New England.
Right.
And, you know, I ascribe that to a certain extent to the not the politics vis-a-vis I'm a Democrat, you're a Republican, but the politics of how they handle a polity, a P-O-L-I-T-Y, up there.
Okay? Right. No Quakerism, honestly. It's the old live and let live. It's that New England, you know, Southerners.
But it's not just that, Mark. It's the fact that, for instance, with New England town meetings, when everybody right. in your community has to get together to decide when and how much to pay for paving the sidewalks or filling in potholes, and everybody is participating within that polity. Sooner or later, exclusionary rules have to go by the boards. Exclusionary practices. What if the guy who can get the deal on the cement for the sidewalks happens to be gay? Are you going to, because New Englanders are New Englanders, and hardscrabble and flinty and the fact of the matter is. It don't matter if the guy's gay if he can get the cement cheaper. And that becomes that's like right in your face when you're having a town meeting about it and you have to look the guy in the face and, I don't want your cement, you're gay. It don't work.
The other thing I think is that New Englanders are very much into, that's what they do. Frankly, the Swedes and it's a Scandinavian thing, Northern European thing. It's like, Netherlands, whatever they do, they do. I don't want to know their sexual history. Southerners are much more in people's face. As a Southerner, I grew up in Nashville, Tennessee. I can tell you that Southerners want to know what you're doing. They want to know what your business is. They want to find out what's going on and stop it. New Englanders are very much, whatever other people are doing, it's just none of my business. And I think it's also part of that New England mentality of just saying, it ain't my business. It's not my wife or husband or children. So whatever. It's not my business. And there's a certain sort of belief that other people have the right to do whatever they do as long as they don't harm anybody else. And I also think comes from there.
I think you're right. Well, Mark, this has been a delightful hour and a half.
I have enjoyed it.
And again, if I hurt you or offended you in any way by going off on that little bit of radio of the mind, theater of the mind, I apologize. I was not trying to hijack it. But you know what? This guy doesn't. Whenever this guy shows up on a radio show and somebody does that to him, there's always somebody sitting on a dump button the minute he says lunatic. Right. And he had to sit there and take it or run away like the coward that he is. And we made him run away, Mark Levine.
Yes, we did. We certainly did.
And, that's part of the philosophy. And so I hope you're not ashamed and I hope you're not hurt.
No, I'm not ashamed. I'm not ashamed. It was good because I had a good 45 minutes to show that he had no legal argument. I'm you and I, Bob, have our differences. I'm not a huge name-calling kind of person. I tend to want to throw logic at them and make them wilt. Maybe I don't have the theater that you have sometimes. But I was glad is I had most of the hour to show how his legal. Whenever he threw all that theater at me, I just ignored it. Radical homosexual agenda, I just ignored it. I concentrated on the legal and logical arguments, proved he had none, and then, Bob, you used the theater to beat him at his own theater game, which was kind of interesting. You just threw the hate back at him, and he wilted like the Wicked Witch of the West.
Because he's a little coward, but they all are, aren't they? Mark, thanks so much. It was the kind of magic that can only happen on the horn.
And just
to make everybody, I don't want to kiss him. I don't want to roll around and get all hot and sweaty with him, like I said.
You don't?
No.
I don't know. I have to look at his picture. No. I'll tell you this. Tomorrow, I just want to announce I'll be on for 2 hours before. I know Bob's going to see Elizabeth Kucinich. You'll get me for 2 hours from 5 to 7 p.m. I'm going to grab Bob's first hour while he's traveling. So I hope you all will stay tuned.
That's all you're going to grab a Bob, too.
That's it. I'm going after you, Bob. I'm grabbing your first hour. So if anyone wants to call in, I got 2 hours to fill. You want to talk about what happened today or anything else, please, please call in tomorrow. I'll see you all then.
All right. Thanks, Mark. Take care. Mark Levine, host of the Radio Inside Scoop, we carried it over for an hour of tonight's program just because we don't have that kind of good fun just every day. And, again, if I offended anybody, I apologize. But I really believe that these freaks have to have it thrown back in their faces. And did you notice that no matter how many mean things I said to him, he only hung up when I said I wanted to kiss him? Especially our friends in the gay community. I hope you did not think I was mocking. That was not my intent. My intent was only to show this man up for the hateful freak that he is. So, Pastor Keller, Too bad you're not man enough to carry on a conversation and you have to run away. But it's not that surprising. That's the way you and your ilk are. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. You know how to reach the program, 877-443-2366, 877-4 head on. Email comes into bobkincaid@gmail.com. We'll be right back. Hey, Pastor Keller. This is for you. This is The Horn.
Thinking ahead means preparing for the future. The future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
We know you want to save big on your phone bill, and we know how you can.
That's right. We do.
We're saving more than 50% on our home phone bill since we switched to CityNet's digital phone plan.
Really? Over 50%?
CityNet's digital phone plan is only $24.95 a month.
Only $24.95?
You get unlimited local and long-distance calling.
Just $24.95?
And with CityNet's digital phone plan, you keep your current number. All you need is a high-speed internet connection. Get details at citynet.net.
$24.95.
And, oh, this is cool. With CityNet's digital plan, I can use my home phone anywhere in the world with high-speed internet. No extra cost.
There's 20, and there's 4, and there's 95.
Did I mention CityNet is a West Virginia-owned company?
Did I mention $24.95?
Save at least 50% on your residential phone. Get unlimited local and long distance and keep your same number, all for just $24.95 a month. Visit citynet.net today for more details. Some exclusions and restrictions may apply.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head-on with Bob Kincaid.
Well, it certainly is prayer meeting, and even more than I had expected this evening. I gotta find me some fundies to chew on more often. That was liberating. Honest to God, it was. Now, I didn't get near as mean as I could have. Not at all. See, he didn't like my speech. He thought it was hateful. He felt like because you know how it is with these phony evangelical fundies. They constantly, I know more about persecution than anybody. Yeah, because you're persecuted. Because you can't get a close parking spot every Sunday morning at your... Oh, wait, you're the preacher. You get the close parking spot. Never mind. Yeah, persecuted. Email rolling in from our pal Marty. I enjoyed how you took on that so-called man of faith. I must say that I found it particularly offensive, the attitude he demonstrated when you went over what happened with your son. He seemed to emanate the same attitude that still exists for victims of rape in some areas of this country. Go get them, my friend. Every chance I get, Marty. Every chance I get. Yeah, victims of rape. Well, yeah, and you know, my God, it amazes me. There are people that are paid a lot of money to be hateful toward people who have been victims of violent crime. That nasty, filthy old bat in North Carolina. Virginia Fox finally got around to writing an apology letter to Matthew Shepard's mother. Yeah, you know how it is with the pig lickings. Non-apology. The Matthew Shepard Foundation has confirmed that Judy Shepard received Fox's note, but wouldn't offer any further comment about the content of it. It was probably... But you know how it is with repiglicans and fundamentalists. I'm sorry if you were offended. You know, that's not an apology. I'm sorry if you were offended, because that means that it's your fault for being offended. Look, I want to do one thing real quick, and we will go into some other matters this evening
thereafter.
By the way, Representative John Chaffetz, Republican of Utah, is angry about the D.C. Council's approval of a bill recognizing marriage equity in other states. 12-1 vote. Now, what Representative John Chaffetz, apart from the fact that the Congress still holds an iron boot over D.C. residents, apart from what some fundamentalist goon from Utah thinks, cares, does it, about marriage equity in D.C., I have no idea. But he has said, some things are worth fighting for, and this is one of them. It's not something I can let go softly into the night. You know, Congressman Chaffetz, we understand how it is with you repig-licking fundamentalists, but you don't need to be talking about going softly. You know, there are children present. I can let go softly into the night. I recognize the Democrats are in the majority, but I represent the majority of Americans on this issue. Well, out there doing personal, you know, sort of self-election kind of things. Now, what does he want to do? Because of this 12-1 vote, 12-1 in D.C., if Mark Levin was hearing this, his head would be exploding. You know what he wants to do? He wants to do the same thing Rick Goodhair Perry wanted to do until he needed some federal funding for, you know, the Smithfield flu outbreak. He wants to destroy D.C. He wants to eliminate the District of Columbia because of marriage equity. The best alternative is retrocession of residential areas of D.C. back to Maryland, as was done with Arlington, Virginia. Under this option, D.C. residents would receive not only a vote in the House and two in the Senate, but a state legislature, a governor, and many other benefits. No, they wouldn't. Because they're not Marylanders. They haven't been Marylanders for 200 flippin' years, you right-wing fundamentalist mormon. Meanwhile, this is a guy who also hollers about keeping government limited, keeping it out of our way, and empowering the American people. Just kind of long as they're not gay, you know. Or want to have a meaningful marriage. Just as long as they, by living the quiet solitude of their American lives, don't run a risk of proving what a damn screaming dinosaur in the darkness people like Jason Chaffetz are. What a sick bastard he is. Would absolutely turn thousands upon thousands of people upside down, turn their lives upside down just to enshrine his personal bigotry. Man, that's some ego. And he's doing it in the name of Jesus or Morani or Joseph Smith or some goober. More on the Mormons later. I'm convinced that Joseph Smith wasn't using his seeing stones properly. It's not Mormon, it's moron. Okay? Just is. So that's that, and there's other stuff to go into that sort of dovetails around some of the things that we've been talking about. But right now, and I'm doing this, I'm doing this because why? Well, because we talked about what happened to my son, and we've talked about it before. And he was sitting here while we were doing it. And it makes him very uncomfortable. And since he is Horn Intern Junior Grade Ferg, I'm going to offer him an opportunity to let you know what was going through his mind with all of this stuff, because I think his point of view is valid, and I think his point of view is necessary, and I believe that if we're going to be liberals, that his point of view is required. So stand by while I swing some microphones around. Okay, so there you are, Ferg.
Well, what was running through my mind when all this was happening is, as soon as it mentioned about the beatdown that I took, all that went through my mind was the very memories of me getting beat down. And the memories to me are the most horrible things next to, if I were to die and I had to remember it, that would be the first worst thing, dying, but the second worst thing in my life would be those memories.
And I don't want you to relive any of it, but let me ask you, the violence, well, has, in your school, Ferg, has the violence gone away? Has the violence abated any?
No, actually. There's been kids that have been having eyes that are gouged, not literally out of their heads, but people punch them in the eyes so hard that their eye bleeds.
And are the sexual epithets still being thrown around?
Yes. I'm on a regular basis when somebody has to call somebody else in my class or anybody else of that matter in my school, when they go around calling people gay, I take up for the people and I end up getting called fag or queer or flamer or something like that just because I'm taking up for them. And it's the same as somebody saying, well, you're not a Christian, because I simply said that the dinosaurs were wiped out by a meteor.
Yeah, well, huh?
It's the same as that, because it's like you could make a valid point to them and say something that's truth, and then they can take it out of context and just say, well, you're a fag because you're taken up for them.
And these are some of the same people that are members of the Fellowship of Christian Athletes, right?
Yeah, the cult.
Yeah.
As you and Juanita pointed out to me.
Yes, it's a cult. So, are you still, and I ask you this not as some radio host, because that's not, I ask you as your father. Is what happened to you last year, is it still preying on your mind?
All the time, because what I remember is after that, I have nightmares about it, because, except it's not a nightmare, it's like a dream that has a real twist of reality in it, because I think about what happened and then what I could have done to the boy, because the tables could have been turned on him, and he would have been the one getting the beatdown. Because now that kids call me that stuff and shove me around now, they end up throwing the first punch, and I end up throwing the last one, because I fight back now. That's all I'm obligated to do to them now, because they have to continuously beat on me. But what I could have done to the boy after he had beat me down, it dawns on my mind every day.
I'm sorry, son. I'm very, very sorry. You know, your mother and I have done what we can to try to, and we'll do more to try to make this stop. But if I understand you correctly, your response to this situation has been to meet violence with violence now, because that's the only thing these little Christians understand.
Exactly. And, I mean, it's not so much being called gay. Even if I were gay, I wouldn't care what they'd call me. I'd let it roll off my shoulders. Because...
But they don't just use the names. They use physical assaults, right?
Yeah. They come up and they corn dog you. They hit you.
Okay, you're speaking languages that maybe other people don't. What is to corn dog?
It's to knee somebody in the butt, like towards the tailbone, and try to break it. I mean, they knee you with all of their power that they have, or they'll come back and hit you in the head, or they'll hit you in the testicular area, and they'll just be cruel to you for it, because you have to take up for people. And people get called gay every day, and they try to come up with a good comeback, and then they end up just isolating them from themselves. They isolate themselves from other people because other people have to continuously pick on them, and That's kind of what.
Is it such a zoo there that no one stands up for anyone else because everyone else is subjected to the abuse? I mean, where Ferg? Where are the teachers? Where's the principal?
Oh, they're there. They are always there watching. But what they have said, and this is not a mistake or anything, every teacher has said it to us, including the principal. And I quote, they say that this school is so out of control, we cannot do anything about it. The parents are out of control, the students are out of control, we can't do anything about it.
And so these attacks, like you said, this corn dogging, they attack you from behind? How can you defend yourself?
You can't. They'll trip you and knock you to the ground and stuff, and you don't know it. That's why when you're at my school, instead of middle school, you just grow a sense, and it's like a developing sense every time because you grow a sense that you always have to watch your back. If you don't, something bad's going to happen to you. So you're continuously looking back over your shoulder, and somebody's behind you laughing and stuff. And then you go ahead.
Is it just boys, or is it boys and girls both?
It's boys and girls both. Girls, like, today, this is...
Don't name names.
I'm not. This was the most horrible fight that I've seen since the boy and me. Two girls in my class, one girl went up to the other and shoved her, and then the other one punched the other girl in the head, and then they start clawing at each other, and by the end, one had a gash in her arm. One of them had their shirt half ripped off. It was hanging. And then the last thing that was the worst thing was that one of the girls were bleeding on their forehead from a cut because one of the girls took their nails across their forehead. And they went to the office, but their moms had to come and fight and say,
"Well, my little girl wasn't really doing anything wrong. She was just defending herself."
And the principal just had to go, "Okay, I don't have any proof, evidence, or anything."
When these things happen, Ferg, do other students stand up and say, "I saw what happened, here's what happened"?
No, instead they go, "Fight, fight, 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 fight. Ooh, look at that. Fight, fight, fight." They don't say anything like that. The ones that do are the ones that can't be believed anymore, like me. I'm seldomly believed. I got one of my friends out of suspension and after school because three girls went and lied on him, saying he was sexually harassing another girl. He's not around girls. He's never around girls most of the time. He always sits with me, a couple of my other friends, and one other girl, but that's not even the girl. And we're all best friends, and we hang out with each other, but they went and told on him, and he just started bursting out crying. And it went, and he was worried about it going down on his permanent record, saying, "How am I going to get into a good school with this? How am I going to get into a good school with the big words 'sex offender' on my permanent record?"
So you have to worry about this stuff instead of worrying about whether or not you understand concepts of pre-algebra. Is that what you're?
Well, it's kind of a balance because I can worry about all that stuff because I've actually gotten my grades up again and I'm doing better. But for a while there, I was more worried about what's going to happen to me tomorrow. Some kid said he was going to beat my butt. Am I going to have to get into a fight? I don't like fighting, but am I going to have to get into one? Instead of going, "Oh, gee, my geography homework, I've really got to get that done. It's a 5-page report due in 2 days. I got to get that done." I worry more about what's going to happen to me than what's going to happen to my grades. It's not like that anymore. I can balance it, but before then, I could care less about what happens to my grades. Even if I failed and had to become a hobo out on the streets of Beckley, I'd rather be safe than have good grades. I mean, do you know what I mean, Dad?
Well, yeah, I do.
Because I've watched fights and stuff in my school. I've watched kids hit each other with lunch trays, stab each other with forks, pocket knives, pencils. I have a scar from where a kid stabbed me with a pencil. And
You got more scars than that, don't you?
Yes, I've got scars from where people's cut me. I've got scars from where people stab me with scissors. I've got scars from where people stab me with pencils, hit me with stuff. And fifth grade, a kid tried to kill me, literally, by holding me up against a wall, and I couldn't really do anything because he had a hold. he had a hold of my throat, and I was trying to get out of it. And the teacher was just standing there going, "Do you want to go to jail? You're going to kill him."
I think you've heard me doing a few too many voices, Ferg.
No, that's exactly what he sounded like, because he was drunk during school hours. And our former principal, Mr. Pinnock.
Yeah, no names.
Sorry, Dad. I didn't mean to. Our former principal had found that out because he had seen the teacher's thermos, and it had beer in it.
Who put the coffee in my coffee?
It had beer in it.
Nah, I doubt it was beer. But anyway. So you've got to fight your way through 7th grade. You're going to have to fight your way through 8th grade, too?
No doubt. It's going to be the same kids. A couple of them have already gone off to alternative school, but you know what? I don't think that'll really make a difference. They should be expelled for the things they do at my school. And as sick as this sounds...
Are you making any of the trouble?
No. I'm not the one throwing maxi pads on the window, tampons in the floor where they cut themselves and go, "There's a bloody tampon in the floor." And then I'm not the one who, if y'all don't know what this means, I'll tell you in a minute. Bag tag the windows.
Okay, yeah, we're going to have to... Sorry, I'm a geezer. And he'll be talking along, and it's, wait, stop, son, need it in English. Okay, so go ahead, bag tag the window?
Yes, I mean, for some people out there, if you can, you can get a pretty good point off of it. If somebody in the chat room knows it, explain it to my dad, but I'll go ahead and say it anyways. Boys flop out their testicles out of their pants and hit the windows with them, or their desks.
Jesus Christ.
Or computers, or anything they can hit it with. And then they throw globes in the room. They scream out. There's a song by the Lonely Island called "Like a Boss," and they scream out like the song, where parts of the song where it goes like, it says "pussy out," and they say that kind of stuff. Except they have to do it just right, because you have to catch the beauty of the song, as they say, and the teacher just goes, "Oh." And if a good kid's sitting there whispering to his friend about rays or tattoo, rays is a group of teens which one of my friends and I are the captains for Fayette County. We're the teen empowerment group to tear down tobacco laws, and it's nothing else. It's just strictly tobacco.
Yeah.
And we talk. We have our sponsors. And then we're highly known throughout the United States, and right now we are in the region RESA 4, and right now I'm getting ready to attend the state raise-on, but that's considered sand in the desert for what's going on, because it doesn't matter. Kids will go, "All you people in RAYS are fags. Tobacco's cool."
And so, what's the other one? RAYS and what?
Tattoo. It stands for Teens Against Tobacco Use, which my friend and I are also the captains for that. We do commotions. They're like protests, except in a more, it's not as much of a out there way. It's not a, "We hate tobacco, you best stop," that kind of stuff. It's not like we're protesting for, like you say, clean coal, which is, that's just...
Yeah, you missed the hand gesture. He hasn't figured out yet that it's radio and hand gestures don't translate.
I can't help it. I have to use my hands when I talk.
Yeah, I know. You're related to me.
But, what we do is we run commotions. We get points for it. And however many points we get, they reward us. Like, if we had the most points in the state, we would have won, just the captains would have won a trip to Florida for their family. And what happened is we were protesting one day, and some of the kids came back to the school and tore down our posters, our bulletin board. They took some of our supplies and threw them out all over the gym floor. And, I mean, they just trashed our stands. And we can't do much like that anymore, because everybody has to continuously vandalize our property in both physical And
well, what about, let me ask you then, bag tag, they guys flip their genitals out and whack the windows with them? And then what is, okay, that's bag tagging a window. What is bag tag in general, though?
Bag tag is, it was actually, it's not a recent game. It was actually made up about 2 years ago, and teachers started to understand it. Teachers apparently have to take a class to learn all the new slangs, all the new words that are used by teenagers and stuff. That way they can understand what they're saying. But bag tag in general was like a tagging game, like tag. Except you had to hit people with your balls.
In the crotch?
No. You had to hit them with your testicles. Which, I mean, I've watched kids do it out on the football field last year. And that was, like, the most disturbing thing I'd ever seen. The school now was not, and I'm not saying back when the dinosaurs roamed with you, Dad, because...
Oh, thanks.
You're welcome.
I rode a little Velociraptor to elementary school every morning, Ferg. Did you know that?
Yes, I did. You showed me a picture.
He was so cute. I'd bring him out live flesh every morning and hand it to him. I could feed him by hand as long as I was wearing plate metal gloves.
Awesome. But anyways, the school now is a lot more different from when you were in school, Dad.
It always is, by the way.
I know.
I can't. You know, I can't wait till the Ferg the Third comes along. I can't wait. Well, yeah, I can. I mean, we're not going to be a teenage father or anything. But one of these days, you know, when you're a fabulously successful radio host or lawyer or architect or whatever it is you're going to be, maybe you'll be a golfer or a baseball player. Who knows? Maybe you'll be a professional bass fisherman.
I don't want to be a professional bass fisherman.
But anyway, who knows? But I can't wait till the Ferg 3 looks at you and says, you know, Dad, it wasn't like that when you went to school. Because then you'll look at him, Ferg, and you'll say, wait a minute. Wait a minute. I get the snot beat out of me all the time. What do you mean it wasn't like this when I... Well, Dad, they weren't bringing machine guns to school. But I digress.
No, now they bring field dressing knives. Right now.
Well, yeah, you never know when a runaway deer is going to get loose in the halls of the school, and you're going to have to gut it and field dress it right there in the hallway in front of the teacher's lounge.
Well, I mean, it's just the way kids have to be. That school can be better. Their promise to the region for the kids who go to Anstead Middle and who did go to Anstead Middle, the promise was we will give them a satisfying education for both the student, the pupil, pupil, and the parents. Because that is what matters the most. Your child's well-being and their education. I'm not getting education at my school. I'm getting fights. I'm getting yelled at by teachers for things I don't do. I'm getting constantly bullied. I'm getting thrown into lockers. I'm getting cut. I'm getting stabbed. That is not a school. That is the ghetto.
No, stop it right there. The father moment, that is not the ghetto. What you're describing is an insane asylum and not a school.
Well, yeah. But you got to admit, there's more people around here.
No. That's part of my job. You just injected an element of race in it, and that is not, that's just wrong. But that's okay, because you hear those words too, don't you?
Yeah, I hear...
Nah, there's words we don't say.
I'm not going to say any bad words. I was going to say, like, I hear boondocks, ghetto, I hear, I can't remember the one word I learned today. Oh, it was so fascinating, you guys would love it. It was a new modern word.
No, I wouldn't love it. I wouldn't love it, Ferg.
You wouldn't, but it'd just blow your mind
away.
You
understand that some of what you're dealing with is what happens after 8 years of educational neglect that start from the top down from the Bush administration. Do you understand that, Ferg?
Yes, actually, I do.
Here it is, May. Have you had your standardized test for the year?
We're getting ready to take it next week. We're going to start, not next week, but the week after this one. This coming week is for studying. the West test. We're taking West test preps, but this one's not. This is not just the Western educational standardized test. This is the West test too. This means it's a more complicated design of a test built for the computer. We're not taking it on paper anymore, because if when they took it on paper, there are more chances of kids running into the same questions that another kid was on and them cheating. So they're doing it on the computer now, but we're getting them to take it. And frankly, kids don't care anymore. They don't care if they fail. They don't care if they pass. Right now, all they're wanting is, no joke, I accidentally caught a couple kids. They're apparent. I'm not going to use any bad words, so they have urges that they have to express at school, physically. And it was some of the most disturbing, it was a horror film to me. Because all they were doing in the bathroom, they were just sitting there and just going. And I just thought that was the most disturbing thing in the world. But they don't care if they pass. They don't care if they fail. But on the other hand, I do. I hope that one day I will have good enough grades, good enough academics, good enough attitude, good enough citizenship to go to a place like Middlebury, Westminster, Harvard, Yale, Princeton, somewhere like that, a nice Ivy League school. But the way I'm getting taught, I'll go past middle and trail, and I could ace it.
Yeah, no. Don't you get cocky.
I'm not. I'm just using this as an example. You could go past middle and trail and ace it right off the bat, but when you get to college, you're going to go, I didn't learn this stuff at all. In the scientific study, I remember, kids forget 3/4 of what they were taught over the summer, and that's why they do the last grade review. They give you a booklet, a pencil, and they say start writing. And you review everything you learned with that last year. You can't remember half of it because you were so drowned out by it, by having fun and forgetting everything, that you actually forgot your intelligence and that you completely stopped making your brain function the way it needs to. And I'm in band, and if I want to go to marching band or something, which I want to do for middle and trail, I have to... I'm in fifth grade band right now as well. I'm taking advanced band, which I'm good at it in there. But I go to fifth grade band now, and I'm doing it by myself because everybody else took fifth grade band and sixth grade band. I didn't. I had to quit because I had a drunk teacher.
Nah.
I'm not mentioning names.
No, but that's you can't prove that, Ferg. So yeah.
Yes, I can.
No, you can't.
Okay, the principal can.
No, he can't. This is not the forum for that.
All right.
But no. You've kind of digressed. But the bottom line for is that I don't know. What's your attitude? Do you want obviously you said you want things for yourself. How are you going to get through the next 5 years of public education?
I honestly don't know. I want better for myself, and I want better for my friends. My friends don't get very, very good education because they're constantly... The teachers aren't teaching you. They're constantly screaming at the kids who...
Well, do you understand that middle school is probably the hardest place to teach?
Yes, I do, because of all the teenagers, hormones fluxing. Yes, I understand that. And I understand I have them, too. And I understand that I can be a pain in the butt for teachers sometimes. But then again, I'm trying my best to get through everything, and I can't really get through anything because I'm too busy being called queer, fag, flamer, and gay. Because kids have to come up to me, and they have to say, so, do you like girls? Yeah, I like girls. Why aren't you dating anybody? Because I don't want to. I'm working on school. Yeah, you're gay. And they walk off. They don't give you a chance to explain anything. If you say you're not...
It's not anything that you owe them an explanation for, Ferg. Do you understand that?
Yes, but still, I mean, I laugh at everything that they say to me, but deep down inside my mind, the primitive part of my brain just wants to kill him. Not literally, but
we've talked about lizard brain stuff, right?
Yes. But, I mean, it's just the way they have to say stuff to me. They can be nicer about it. I mean, I don't care if I'm called gay or anything by anybody. It's just the way they have to do it constantly. It's a consistent type of word that they love to use. It's like them using a retard. They don't use it right.
There's no right.
I know you shouldn't even use the word retard.
There's no right way to use that word.
I know. I'm sorry. I wasn't thinking. I mean, they call you that out of the word mental retardation, which is a delaying function of the brain. And I mean, I know some kids, and I'm not trying to bring it up and go off course, but they're called gay, like Adam Kefert.
Yeah.
Sorry. Oh, he doesn't go to my
school.
He doesn't go to my
school. Stop. No names.
Okay. He went to my school until a girl blamed him for something, and he was the most honest kid I knew, but she blamed him for touching her.
That.
And stuff, but...
No,
I'm not getting off course, but they...
No, it's not off course. It's too much information.
I know. But they were calling him gay for that stuff, but he was an amazing drawer. He could draw anything you wanted him to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But he could draw anything you wanted him to. But he was always called gay and stuff. And so he finally had his mom drop him out. And then after that, he just quit coming. He's got to take West test after school from now on. He's not going back to Anstead Middle because of all the kids that tortured him. And he was autistic. And to kids like that, that's teasing and making fun of. To a boy like him, that's torture. That's pure torture. Because I've seen him cry. And it makes me...
You've seen a lot of people cry. You've cried. There's a lot of crying.
I know, but no, I mean, it just makes me...
No, I'm not minimizing what you're talking about. It sounds like there's a lot of it that goes on.
Well, it just makes me upset because it was just the way he explained things. He'd say, kids continuously pick on me. And I don't know what to do. Help me. I'd say, well, I don't know what to do for you. I can't help you. I can tell a teacher, but I doubt a teacher will do something. So, just about 2 days ago, his mom called in.
No hearsay. I'm not. We're learning here.
I know. His mom called in.
No, you don't say what his mom called in and said because
I'm
you did not...
I'm not saying what she said.
You didn't take the phone call, and therefore you are not competent to describe what was discussed.
I'm not describing what was discussed. Mr. Skaggs came in.
No names!
This isn't the teacher.
I don't care who it is. No names.
Okay. The guy came in and said to the class, because of you all, Adam's gone.
Ah! No
I
names.
I already mentioned
I don't
his
care
name.
If you mention no names.
He's gone. But after that, he just quit coming and everything, so it's just nothing they can do. Because being called gay is just something that almost every teenager at middle school has to go through now. Including me. Because you can't take up for anybody and not be called a name. You're just the same as that kid had jumped me in school. I remember while he was beating my head into the floor, he was calling me a fag. He said, you fag, I can't wait to hurt you. And I remember that because, well, I heard it. And I got up, and I wasn't crying because I was hurt when I was being hit or anything. I was crying because of what he did to me. He had waited behind a water fountain until I came into the school. And you can't even see the water fountain when you first walk in. And he had to pop out from behind a water fountain and catch me by surprise and knock me to the floor. Now that is also a sign of being a coward.
Sure it is.
You're having to hide.
Yeah.
From
well, Ferg, that's. I wanted to offer you a chance to talk about this, and I'm sorry you mentioned names and stuff, but you'll learn. This is a tough business. But I appreciate your honesty and I appreciate your candor. Thanks, Ferg.
You're welcome.
And I hope you understand that that's not offered gratuitously. Yeah, I did a little bit of theater with Pastor Keller earlier. I did. Because I wanted him to have a little bit of what he does to others. And that is a brutally, it's probably an inappropriate response. I don't know. But he never has to take it. He only dishes it out. And to a certain extent, maybe I'm a little bit like Ferg. I'm sick as a liberal, as a person who believes in human rights for all humans. I'm sick of taking it from the likes of thugs like Pastor Keller. I am sick, 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 sick of taking it from the likes of Pastor Keller. So what Ferg shared, I didn't was not gratuitously or pruriently offered, but was offered instead for the purpose of showing the world that the Pastor Kellers of the world help create. While Ferg was talking, I was watching the chat room. And I couldn't I saw people saying, you know, isn't there a magnet school? Isn't there somewhere else he can go? No. No. This is Appalachia. We are not fully Americans here. We don't have the same things that people have in the rest of America. What schools we have, those in government frequently try to close because there is a deliberate effort to depopulate the so-called coal fields. So that coal can run amok and devil take the hindmost for those who won't leave. I could get, and you've heard from her before, I could get our friend Lorella Scarborough on the air to tell us about the story of Marsh Fork High School down in the Coal River Valley. It was a perfectly functional school. It was perfectly adequate to the needs of the community. But it was closed. And now children ride an hour, hour and a half, 2 hours sometimes, to get to school at a distant location where if there's an emergency, there's no way a parent can get there in a reasonable amount of time. And they do that to depopulate the region. Because guess what's going on behind the site where Marsh Fork High School used to stand? A massive mountaintop removal operation. No, there are no magnet schools. I mean, I do have an alternative, I suppose. I could, well, no, not really, because you know, where's the money going to come from? I could pay tuition to send my kids to the local Roman Catholic school where they could be sexually abused by some priest. Or I could send them to the local evangelical fundamentalist school where they could have their little skulls opened up and have the same kind of toxins that Pastor Keller preaches poured into their into their minds. And let's be clear about this. Leave, Bob. I can't leave. I can't leave. And it's not Bob can't leave, it's thousands of people in similar circumstances all over Appalachia can't leave. That's all we've got. And it is a constant struggle and a constant uphill battle with one foot in a bucket just to hang on to some semblance of civilization. What I said is true. A few years back, the Attorney General of West Virginia, a good man by the name of Daryl McGraw, one of his deputies formulated an anti-bullying policy and program that they tried to institute across the state of West Virginia in the school systems. But the criteria for that anti-bullying program included language that said children should not be bullied by other children over actual or perceived sexuality, and the Christians and the followers of the Prince of Peace rose up en masse to demand that that language be stricken because they had a First Amendment religious right to torment the other, to torture the different, to make miserable the very, every the literal breath taken in and put out by the children that they decided should be targets for their little thug offspring. That's Ferg's world. That's Doodle's world. It's Margie's world. And it's the world that there are two precious little grandchildren growing into. I love this place. That probably sounds a little bit psychotic or twisted for me to say, but I do. 9 generations of my family have called this place home. My mother and father went to high school 2 miles from here. My whole family did, practically, in generations past. Why can't there be a 10th generation? An 11th? But thanks to elected representatives who consciously or unconsciously work at depopulating this region, and thanks to their willing assistants, people like Pastor Keller, who advocate for hate-filled, violent places, even something as sacrosanct as a learning institution, it is a struggle every day. Where we live is the world that Pastor Keller wants to birth in the rest of America for no other reason than to save his own skin and keep him in the tall cotton. And to me, that's perverted. It's twisted. It's sick. It is damaging and damning. And this is one of those moments when it's tough to be a guy who doesn't have any answers, because Agnes and I spend a lot of time, what in the world do we do? And how do I blame Ferg or any of my other kids if they're angry as hell? I can't. That's the short answer. I can't. So when you hear one of these right-wingers, like Representative Steve King of Iowa, saying everybody just needs to keep their sexuality to themselves, or that we just need to enforce the existing laws and that punishing a hate crime shouldn't be done because no one knows what's in the mind of an attacker, You know what a lie it is, and you know why that lie is being told. So we'll pull back from a little bit of this really, really personal stuff and get into the world writ a little bit larger after we come back from the break. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is activist radio. This radio is real. This ain't no living room drama. This is, in short, the horn. And I'm Bob Kincaid.
Listening to WIN, Workers Independent News. I'm Doug Cunningham. The Obama administration and the Democratic Congress have pledged to move forward with establishing a new health care system for the country, but not everyone has a seat at the table deciding what the best system should be. Jesse Russell has more.
Tuesday morning, the Senate Finance Committee held a hearing regarding the future of health care in the United States, featuring 15 witnesses. However, not a single witness was a supporter of single-payer health care. Wanting their voices to be heard, a number of doctors and advocates stood up at the start of the session and demanded a seat for single-payer at the table. And as they spoke, they were immediately escorted out of the room and arrested by Capitol Police.
It's only when the people that are living in the park and the people that are living on Park Avenue have the same health care that everybody will have high-quality health care.
The speakers who stood up were from the organizations Physicians for a National Health Program, Healthcare Now, and Single Payer Action. Senator Max Baucus of Montana is the head of the Finance Committee, and he is also the leading Democrat in the Senate to receive donations from health insurance companies. Baucus has received more than $400,000 from the companies and their employees. As the head of the committee, it was up to Baucus to bring order to the hearing.
The whole point of this hearing and other hearings is to try to determine the best route, the best option, in determining how to best reform our country's health care system.
Although he said he respected the position of single-payer advocates, he didn't offer any of the physicians in the audience a seat at the table.
The Troy Area Labor Council has become the most recent labor organization to call on the AFL-CIO to endorse a bill in the U.S. House of Representatives that would provide single-payer health care. The Troy Labor Council is the 127th Labor Council to endorse H.R. 676, the bill introduced by Representative John Conyers of Michigan. The Labor Council wants the AFL-CIO to put the endorsement up for a vote during the AFL-CIO convention in September. The California Nurses Association National Nurses Organizing Committee is joining with United American Nurses and the Massachusetts Nurses Association to form a 150,000-member nurses union. When the unions complete their merger with the National Founding Convention in December, it'll become the largest registered nurses union in U.S. history. The new nurses super union will focus on organizing non-union nurses. The new combined union will also push for comprehensive health care reform. Next week, they're working together to sponsor a national RN Day of Action in Washington, D.C. that will emphasize the nurse-to-patient ratio issue, RN union representation, and health care reform. California Nurses Association co-president Deborah Berger says the collective strength and unity of this new organization will have an enormous impact on improving the lives and workplace standards for all RNs in America and will help nurses deliver higher quality care to patients. You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
That's right. Hour three commences 2 minutes, 2.5 minutes past the hour. Your chance to get your thoughts in, about 50 minutes worth, as it is. You know the phone number. You just heard it. Learn it, know it, use it. Fire it up. And don't wait till 15 minutes before the end of the program and then say, ooh, do it now. That way we don't have to hustle through the conversation. On the line with us right now, as a matter of fact, from sunny Alabama, our good friend Matt, poet, writer, essayist, and General Gadfly of Northwest Alabama. Hey, Matt.
Hey, how you doing, Bob?
I'm doing good.
I was listening to the last hour, and I got to tell you, I kept hearing the word torture in there. I find that interesting. It seems like there's this kind of theme now with the tortures in
yeah,
the
yeah, torture. It's not just for Arabs anymore.
Exactly. It's sort of floating in the ether. It's the zeitgeist. It's torture. Everybody's torturing each other. They're torturing your son at school, you know? It's like, I don't know. Turning on the news is a kind of torture. Watching Fox News is definitely torture. That's how you could torture me. You could tie me to a chair, prop my eyes open, and make me watch Sean Hannity for 24 hours on end. I would be giving you whatever confession you wanted by the end of that time.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Who killed Cock Robin? Lindbergh baby kidnapping? I got it all.
That's right. I killed John F. Kennedy.
And John Lennon.
And John Lennon, exactly. I was, what, 7 years old when that happened? But, yeah, you get my drift.
Yeah.
This whole thing with torture floating in the atmosphere, it just gets to me because you know who brought this to us? This is the Bush legacy.
Yes, it is.
And it's the Bush legacy to us is torture. That's all it has become. Torture 24/7. That's the Bush legacy. He can stop raising the money for his library right now. We just need a torture chamber, the Bush torture chamber. It's the new Bush legacy. And for now and forever. That's all we're going to remember about that guy. 100 years from now, they're going to talk about President George Bush. Oh, yeah, torture. That's our future. That's our legacy for having that guy in office for 8 years. So I was thinking about this recently, and, you know, on top of that, I can't listen to the apologist. Now, that's torture right there, listening to the apologist. The ticking time bomb. People thinking that Jack Bauer is real. You know what I'm talking about, Bob?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah.
I don't watch the thing, but I've got the general idea.
So I had enough at the moment that I was, you know, clicking around Media Matters a few weeks ago, and I encountered Rush Limbaugh slapping himself in the head. Did you see this?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay. You know what I'm talking about. He's referring to the head-slapping part of the torture.
Yes, yes. I'm torturing myself, ladies and gentlemen.
Yes. Yes. Torturing myself. And I thought, you know, Rush, if you're doing it like that's not torture. Slapping yourself in the head isn't torture. Let me slap you in the head. I'll show you what torture is all about.
And you got to do it right. You got to get him in the head. You got it. No, because it's the now you're using the wrong phrase, Matt.
Huh?
It is the attention slap.
The attention slap.
Yeah, that's what it's officially referred to in the torture memos. It's the attention slap. You get the guy in a headlock. You get his head in the crook of your elbow, and you pull it up tight so that you've cut his air off, all right?
Mm-hmm.
That's what you have to do first. And then you start slapping the piss out of him.
Why do all these things involve suffocation? Why is it that you're trying to get somebody to talk? Why do you?
I personally think these kinkmeisters are probably masturbatory asphyxiasts when you get right down to it.
Did you read the part of the report from the Senate report about the suppositories they put in these guys when they took them to Gitmo? These anal suppositories. How more sexualized can you get? You know, people talk about torture porn. Oh, that movie, that's just torture porn. What is it? Hostel, I think it is. It's this popular movie. House of a Thousand Corpses, all these horror movies. Oh, that's just torture porn. Yeah, we're living the torture porn. So I was watching this Rush Limbaugh thing on Media Matters, and I had an idea, and I wrote a short story. I don't know. I think I told you about it when we spoke very briefly offline a few weeks ago.
Yeah.
I think I may have told you in an email or something, but I don't know if you even read it.
Yeah, I did go by OsborneInc.com.
Yes, it's actually posted on my fiction site. Is SouthOfStrange.com.
Yes.
And it was cross-posted for a while on my my politics site. But yeah, this is my idea of what it would be like if Rush Limbaugh was actually tortured. In fact, the title of the story is Torturing Rush Limbaugh.
I already like it.
It's interesting. You know, I've had a few comments on here about this story. I've had some readers leave some interesting thoughts. And, it's kind of like I get both sides. It's great. The most common refrain I get is the only thing that's dissatisfying about this satire is the fact that it's fictional. That's one thing that I get. And then I get, oh, it's trashy. You sound like a redneck asshole. Oh, excuse me. Did I use the A word?
That's okay. Yeah, we'll let that one slide.
As long as I'm not using names, right?
Right. Unless they're names like Limbaugh or Hannity or O'Reilly or Bortz or the Savage Wiener.
Yeah. Yeah, you know what you should do? You should start blanking out their names with little beeps, just like G. Gordon Liddy does with the Washington Post. You can't say Washington Post. They blank it out for them. I don't know why they do that, but I can't stand listening to that sort of thing. And I couldn't stand watching this sort of thing. So I wrote an entire short story. It's about 3,000 words. It's in three parts linked together. Just go to southofstrange.com. It's right there, the first thing you read. And I haven't been writing a lot of poetry lately. I've been writing a lot of fiction. And I just wondered, you mind if I read just a couple paragraphs of this?
No. I was going to ask you to do that.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you. Okay. Here we go. This is a little ways down. This is after they've actually kidnapped Rush Limbaugh, which is fun because they get to beat him up a little bit. Rush Limbaugh woke up in a cinder block cell. We'd set up a heater and humidifier to turn the basement of the building into a sweltering Central American summer. We watched by hidden camera as he slept off the chloroform. We began to record him once he roused to crawl across the dirty concrete floor and retch into the disgusting lidless toilet. He wept into his fat hand for a moment, then roared his desire to do us harm. It was time to begin. We opened the metal door with a slamming insistence. Sam and I had spent an entire afternoon on the installation, making sure it had precisely the right kind of booming clank when open or shut. The colonel gave orders through a megaphone. Robert sicked the German Shepherd on Rush Limbaugh, giving it just enough lead to chase the talk radio king to the back corner of the cell. Sam and I stepped in as soon as Robert called the dog to heel. Rush blubbered, his face contorted in fear as we approached, masked with tasers. "Oh, no," he moaned, turning. He was trying to get away from us in an 8-by-6-foot cell. We shocked him, then shocked him again, and dragged Rush Limbaugh out into the hall. We bound his hands with duct tape, hooded him, and forced him to walk through the plywood maze to disorient him. He gasped for air, fighting to suck oxygen through the burlap. We reached the torture chamber and pulled the hood off so he could take in the tableau we had prepared. He blinked at the light of a single naked bulb. The colonel sat in a lounge chair with torn fabric. A bucket sat by the end of a 6-foot reinforced wooden ramp. "Waterboarding!" he erupted. "Live your rhetoric, fat ass." The colonel was the only one of us who would speak to Rush Limbaugh. The rest of us had taped our mouths shut to avoid thoughtless violations of this rule. It was critical that his voice be the only one Limbaugh could hear. Rush Limbaugh protested his poor health as we strapped him down. "Are you saying you fear for your constitution?" the colonel asked him. "This is not the draft board, you sniveling turd. We won't excuse you from our service because of hemorrhoids." "Who are you people?" Rush Limbaugh demanded as we reinforced his bonds with duct tape, which we would later rip from his flesh. "We are fake soldiers," the colonel said. He never raised his voice by a decibel. The cool, smooth flavor of his voice was eerie enough to give me the shivers, too. Left coast, latte-sipping moonbats. We pal around with terrorist appeasers and plot to install socialism in America. "Democrats," Rush Limbaugh spat. He wiggled his head, trying to refuse the blindfold. "Did Nancy Pelosi put you up to this? I always knew that bitch would..." I punched him in the face. The sound and effect were so satisfying, but I punched him again, and then again. "Enough," the colonel said, assuming the voice of authority. "How do you like that?"
I like that a bunch.
It's satisfying, isn't it?
It is very satisfying. And if I understand correctly, it keeps getting more satisfying.
Oh, it gets more and more. They actually torture him for several days in this story. But one of the things about it is that they're doing everything as prescribed in these quote-unquote torture regulations that came out of the Bush administration. They're not doing anything above and beyond.
Oh, heck no.
Here's the thing. First of all, if you, the reader, and this gives you kind of...
That's dear reader, I think. I think it's dear reader, Matt.
Dear reader, if you, as the reader, feel some sense of satisfaction, then you can understand why a certain segment of America supports torture, because it makes them feel good.
Ultimately, right, because it's, on. I mean, and look, I mean, you just ran the hot little wire right into my lizard brain. And
exactly.
I was that Star Trek creature in that rubber suit, just, "Arr!" Yeah, and tasty.
Yes, the smell of cooked flesh, the lamentations of the woman, yes.
Yes, the lamentations of the women.
Satisfaction you're feeling, and that's what I think goes, that's why you have the apologists for torture, because it makes them feel good. Oh, yeah, we're hurting the terrorists. We're literally hurting them. On the other hand, it's a demonstration in fiction. If you apply these, this is not torture. If this is not torture, then nothing's torture. And really what the point of the torture is, and without giving anything away, I'll kind of tell you that the point of the torture that they do on this character of Rush Limbaugh is to get him to admit that it's torture. And I think it has a surprising end, because it actually ends long after the torture. I invite your readers to read it. Just visit southofstrange.com. I'd be honored to have their comments.
Oh, and you know what? If you don't mind, we'll, with the cooperation of the folks who, folks like John and ELO, Sue, who do the heavy lifting on the website, we'll have to get a link to it at the website. With your permission, of course.
That'd be fine. That'd be fine. You have my permission to link away.
Good, because that's one of the things about the Hannity affair.
Mm-hmm.
It all started with a conversation with Charles Grodin when Hannity said, well, "You can do it. I'll do it for the troops. You can do it." You remember what, and I was proud of him, you remember what Charles Grodin's response was, Matt?
What are you doing on Saturday?
There was that, but he followed up and he said, you can waterboard me. And Charles Grodin said, no, I'd never do that to you. I'd just give you a towel when you're done.
Exactly.
Because Charles Grodin wasn't letting the hot wire run through his lizard brain.
That's right.
And that, by the way, is, I suspect, Hannity's weasel room. No, I offered to let Grodin do it, and Grodin wouldn't do it.
Mm-hmm. It takes strength of character to be able to run the wire through your lizard brain and then back away from it. That takes strength of character.
Yeah, it takes being profoundly human.
Yes.
And a desire to rise above the ugly.
When Charles Grodin made that challenge, there's a little wire running through his brain. There's a little bit. At the same time, his response, no, I would just hand you the towel. Yeah, we're able to back off because we have strength of character. And the question for me really is, what's the character of the country? What's the character of the United States of America? What is our national character?
You're fast approaching some deeply Socratic stuff, Matt. Because
You know me, I'm deep.
I know you are. You are.
Flash.
Yeah, punchline to the bad old joke. This water's cold, deep too. look up the punchline. You can get the rest of the joke. I'm not going to tell. You've gone into one of those eternal truths inquiry kind of places, where if you actually are paying attention to what it means to be blessed with this little ride on this little blue green time machine hurtling through the universe, and theoretically makes the ride worthwhile.
Mm-hmm.
You're making an inquiry about what a just society is.
Exactly.
You're making an inquiry about what justice is. And, go read your Socratic dialogues. You already have. That's what that stuff's all about.
And you've just almost given away the ending of the story, by the way.
Well, I wasn't trying. But great minds do think alike.
Do I have a great mind?
I think you do.
Wow, this means I have a great mind.
Yes, you do. You do have a great mind. Well, two similarly twisted minds think alike.
There you go.
But you and I are on the same wavelength. But the question we have to answer for ourselves is not, do you feel lucky? Well, do you, Punk Nation? the question we have to answer for ourselves is that justice issue. Because justice, and there's another, there's a pair of poems. They're actually for Reader's Theater by Robert Frost. One of them is called A Mask of Reason, and the other one is called A Mask of Mercy.
Mm-hmm.
Guilty people, and you know this, guilty people never ask for justice.
No.
Guilty people plead for mercy.
That's right. They plead extenuating circumstances.
And the question we have to answer as a people, and or as, this liberal corner of the universe that we occupy, Matt, We've heard Rush Limbaugh's words. We've heard him say that broom handle sex at Abu Ghraib and the rape of little teenage boys was nothing more than a fraternity prank.
Mm-hmm.
We've seen his club Gitmo gear that he sells for a profit.
Mm-hmm.
And the justice inquiry that we have to make is whether or not we ourselves are slipping to his level when we look at him and say, you know, you're the one who asked for this. It's that whole and you know, it's manifested in the story of the Exodus as well in the Bible. You know, you're in Florence, you got subjected to some of this too, I'm sure.
Oh goodness, yes.
You're a recovering something or another, I'm sure. I'm a recovering Southern Baptist. Our buddy Kyle's a recovering Church of Christ. You know, a lot of recovering people. But you know, when Pharaoh says, you know, I shall kill the firstborn male child of every family, you know, and that big juvenile delinquent, the bearded, the sky god Yahweh or whatever he is, says, I'm rubber and you're glue. It all bounces off me and sticks to you. And he says, I'm going to give you a little justice. And so I'm going to kill all of your firstborn male sons. And that's the, you know, that's the kind of question we have to answer with regard to Rush Limbaugh. Did he ask, is he deserving of this kind of thing because of the very position that he takes? A scientific mind wants to know whether or not if as part of a rational empirical inquiry, he would then say, it felt like a fraternity prank to me. When the sopping wet rag goes down his throat and the water starts flowing.
Exactly.
And in thinking those things and wanting those things, are we as bad as they are?
Exactly. We don't want to become them. And yet you can't defeat this phenomenon unless you understand it. That's the way I feel. I mean, you have to be able, even though you are a rational human being, you cannot talk to, what was that gentleman you were talking to in the first hour? I actually missed most of that conversation, but I thought it was great what I heard. What was his name again?
Are you talking about Pastor Keller, or are you talking about Mark Levine?
That's it, Pastor Keller. You don't want to identify with him, but you still have to understand him, because you're not going to be able to defeat him if you just call him the other. That's the way he works. That's the way his mind works. You know, he's the one who comes out and says, oh, well, those gay people, we just have to hate them. Or we have to pretend that we love them or say that we love them while we're hating them. And we'll bring them to Jesus somehow. You cannot think his way. But you have to understand how he comes to think that way. You have to follow the pathways of his mind. And that's what makes it, this is what I think separates the liberal mind from the reactionary, knee-jerk conservative lizard mind, is the fact that we are able to do that, and then we are able to detach ourselves. That detachment, that ability to let go of the wire into the lizard hindbrain, to step back from it and say, okay, I had my fun imagining that, but now I need to examine my own thoughts.
Yes.
That is what makes us different. That's what.
Yeah, it is
us.
As if, as liberals, we're not walking around with those little rubber wristbands on that say WWJD.
Uh-huh.
We're actually wearing one that says WWHD. What would a human do?
Ooh, I like that wristband. You need to start making those.
We need
merchandising.
See, I need a merchandising guy, Matt. But, you know, our buddy Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin, is often heard to reference some passages from Frank Herbert's Dune, of which I'm sure you're familiar.
Quite.
When the Bene Gesserit mother, Helen Gaius Mohim, brings the Gom Jabbar and the box to test young Paul, there's a line, and it all sort of runs together for me. I can't remember if it's in the book or just in the movie. But she's got the Gamja bar at his neck and his hand in the box.
Yeah, it's right in the beginning of the book.
And she says, "We will find out, young Atreides, whether you are an animal or may possibly be a human."
I remember reading that in seventh grade, and I didn't understand it. It took me years to understand that scene.
Me too. I'm still working on it. But, you know, fear is the mind killer.
Exactly.
And all of, you know, the reason these people who are given, who have given themselves over to their lizard brains, the reason they've done it is because, as I keep returning to within the theme this evening, fear is what they have for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and snacks in the middle. They are, because they are conservative, the very dictionary definition of conservatism is a fear of stepping boldly forward into the future. You know, if a conservative had been in charge of the first moon mission, it wouldn't have been one small step. It would have been hesitating on the last step of the ladder.
Would it even have been hesitating on the step into the rocket on the ground?
Right. Exactly.
That's where the tinfoil hat thinking comes from. When you watch the videos of these tea parties and you see the pictures with the offensive signs, that's what you're seeing. These are not people who will boldly step into the new world we're making. The new world, I should say, that's just being made. Nobody's in control of this. Nobody's making this happen. You know, the funny thing about globalization since 2001 is it's actually accelerated.
I got one of those what the hell stories last night that I'd meant to hang on to.
Mm-hmm.
It turns out, you know, I may have to change the name of this program from Head On with Bob Kincaid to What the F*** with Bob Kincaid. Because it seems like when I sit down to do show prep, man, it's just a constant parade of what the f*** is that?
Maybe it should be a segment.
Yeah. What the f*** is that with Bob? sort of like what's his name? Seth, what's his name? Seth Meyers, oh, really, segment on Saturday Night Live's Weekend Update. Oh, really? What the is that? Well, I run across this story, and I'm desperately trying to find it now. It turns out, you know, everything that is good and everything that has potential to make this world that we're trying to move into, Matt, the right wing and the corporatists will always get their filthy mitts on it and try to spoil it. And here it is. Here's another example of it. I mean, I really, and I think, you know, feel free. It's Wednesday night. It's prayer meeting. And instead of amen or hallelujah or anything like that, just cry out, what the? Turns out that a report has been released, annual industry study by Brown Wilson Group. We're outsourcing green jobs. What the? We are outsourcing green jobs to India. The companies doing the outsourcing, the survey was of 4,000 businesses around the world, among them Xerox, Accenture, IBM Global, CSC, Capgemini, Oracle, HP, EDS, Aramark, Cytel, and Perot. We see the green, the co-author of the Green Outsourcing Report, a guy named Doug Brown, said, "We see the green job offshoring trend increasing. There are a few suppliers who match credentials and outcomes of Indian firms."
You know, it's funny. I get asked oftentimes where I'm located at my job. I've talked about my job before. I work at a call center. I get asked this question all the time. Where are you located? Now, if you ask, if you call customer service for whatever reason, for whatever company, and you ask that question, if they won't tell you, then they're overseas. That's how you know. They're overseas. And here's the truth about outsourcing call centers. Here's something that most people don't understand. If you are calling a company that has a good customer service model, i.e. a responsive customer service model, makes you want to be a customer, you're going to talk to somebody in the United States every single time.
Yes.
If you're dealing with a company that doesn't care, if you're dealing with Citibank, if you're dealing with cable company, you're going to hear an accent in there because they don't care. They think you have no alternative to them. They think they can get away with a bad customer service model. It's a deliberate choice that they make, and that's why they go overseas. Not to denigrate anyone in India.
No. That's not. This is not bashing. No. But you know, we had a hospital run last week, Matt, and my wife's CT scan was read by a guy in India.
Exactly. It's been outsourced.
And here's how bad it is. And bear with me for just a little tiny bit of digression here, just a little, you know, little setup. Poe folks and the Southern Poe folks, that's where I've heard it before. And you know, I think there's a band out there called Government Cheese. Once upon a time,
one, actually.
What?
They're a pretty good one.
Yeah, that's a very good band. Once upon a time, surplus foods produced in this country were bought from the producers by the government in order to support the producers, had nothing to do with the poor, and then distributed for free to hungry people in the United States. Peanut butter, cheese, butter, rice, beans, you know, that kind of stuff. And the generic name for it was the commodity program.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. The commodity program was highly successful, and my father, to his dying day, talked about the quality of the macaroni and cheese that government cheese made. And, you know, he always made too much to get in line for it or anything, but somebody somewhere along the way would say, hey, you want a brick of this welfare cheese? My dad would go, I'll take two if you got them. The peanut butter was the best there was to be had. The butter was exquisite.
Was amazing. The crunchy was amazing. I like crunchy peanut butter. I used to love that crunchy peanut butter.
And, you know, just a plain cardboard can. But anyway, so that was how it started, as a means of propping up food producers. But then the retail industry got involved and said, why can't we play too? We want some of that money. So the food stamp program was born.
Mm-hmm.
And out of the food stamp program, suddenly people, instead of lining up for government cheese, you know, there's an old joke about why you can't take a group picture of West Virginians, because every time the photographer says cheese, they form a single line. We can tell that on ourselves. So the retailers get in on it via the food stamp program, and suddenly you have to go to the grocery store and pay retail prices to get the food, to get half the food that you were getting twice as much of when it was just being delivered through the government.
Mm-hmm.
But the right-wingers hated the food stamp program because, again, it supports poor people and wasn't, they thought, doing enough for their class. Because, among other things, well, I seen it the other day. I seen a woman in there. She paid for a candy bar with a $20 food stamp. She got $20. She got $18.50 back in change. And you know what? I bet she went out there and bought wine. You know? Or I bet she was buying some of the marijuana. You know, they'll trade their food stamps for the marijuana. You've heard it, I'm sure. So now that goes away. And it's replaced by a little magnetic stripe credit card thingy. So there's no money changing hands anymore.
The EBT card, yeah.
Is that what it is? Okay.
It's called the EBT card. I even get calls at work about it, but go ahead.
Well, you're like, okay, so you get calls at work about it, but a lot of states, Florida included, don't. Because apparently government, after 20 years of being told that government's the, you know, what did Ronald Reagan say? The nine most terrifying words in the English language are, I'm from the government and I'm here to help. Well, after
and I'm here for the photo op.
Yeah, and after doping the American people with that poison for a few years, it began to take hold.
Mm-hmm.
So what you get is the government no longer has the ability to administer its own food stamp programs. So guess what happened in Florida? Well, it turns out a lady who was a food stamp recipient and who was trying to, who was unemployed, trying to find a job in Florida, found out that Florida outsourced its administration. Okay, first of all, Florida hired J.P. Morgan Chase. No kidding.
Oh, boy.
To administer its EBT program.
Which made it so much better, I'm sure, and more efficient.
Oh, and cheaper. You know, I mean, we wouldn't want the federal food stamp money actually going for food. No, right, it went to J.P. Morgan Chase. And, hey, J.P. Morgan Chase is a corporate person. They need to get some welfare, too, don't they?
Exactly.
So Florida farms out the administration of the food stamp program to J.P. Morgan Chase. And J.P. Morgan Chase sets up the problem solution line at its call center in India. You do that way too well. I need to get enough money to hire you. So 24-hour customer service call centers, and the calls are answered in Bangalore and Gurgaon. There were two U.S. call centers as well, you know. So that means you've got, I guess, a 1 in 2 chance of getting someone who understands, you know, food stamps. Yeah. What? You are eating stamps for your food? It is worse in America than what I thought.
Milk and honey.
Yeah, then that is not offered as a means of, no, making fun. I'm not. So there's that. So now the healthcare debate is going on. And this thing just blows my mind because the right wing is having its usual hissy.
Predictable hissy.
Yeah, over healthcare. And, I'm trying to see who it was. What was his name? It'll be here in a minute. The man that our buddy Luke in East Tennessee refers to as the Plaid Avenger, Senator Lamar Alexander of Tennessee.
Oh, yeah, Lamar.
Yeah.
The plaid shirt.
Yeah, the Plaid Avenger. Isn't that just precious? He has opined about on the healthcare debate because the Obama administration wants a government-administered health plan that will be available for people who don't have health insurance, right?
Uh-huh.
So the for-profit illness industry is having a fit. And they trot old Plaid Avenger out there to talk the point for them. Talking about, well, we can, and don't you love this? These are free marketeers, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, competition is good, that kind of stuff.
Of course.
Well, the free marketeers have now stepped out to say the following about the idea of a publicly administered health care plan that would compete on a level playing field with the for-profit sickness and death industry.
Mm-hmm.
Lamar Alexander said, it's a big problem. It's like putting an elephant in the room with some mice and saying, okay, fellas, compete. There wouldn't be any mice left after a while. That's right. America's for-profit healthcare industry that traffics in illness and misery and sickness and death is now a poor little mousie.
It's
going to get
mousy.
Squished by the big, mean, bad government. But, you know, this fool doesn't even understand. No, the elephant would go wild in a room full of mice. Or at least that's what I was always taught. You know, Bugs Bunny putting the mouse in. Hey, buddy, come here. Walk over to that elephant.
That's the way it works in the cartoons. You're right.
You know, and the thing is, I'm so sick of these right-wingers, Matt, because I just want to look at them and go, listen, horse's rear ends. Here's how it works. We're going to have a publicly funded, publicly managed healthcare system that people can come into if they want to. Now, for those of you who want to continue getting ripped off with your crappy for-profit health care, stay. Waste your money. I'm a liberal. It's none of my business what you do with your money. Throw it down a rat hole for all I care. Give it to Aetna so they can tell your 17-year-old daughter to go damn well die when she needs a liver transplant. Do that. I don't care.
Have
but
fun.
Quit trying to screw everything up for the rest of us. You know, I said shortly somewhere in January, Matt, that I had a mantra for the next few years as we tried to go about the business of fixing this country. Just a general direction to the Republican Party. It was five words. And this is one of those moments I just really want to use them, and there's none of them dirty. On this healthcare business, sit down and shut up.
They don't know how. It's like they dig themselves deeper. Their words are just a shovel. They refuse to quit digging.
They've gone absolutely out of their minds. You know, Pat Buchanan. Is in a frenzy. The right wing preacher said, well, they've got the most gay friendly president in the world. He's gonna let all them gays just run all over and get gay all over us. What a freak. So Pat Buchanan's doing the same thing, only different. Can I share a little bit of audio with you, Matt?
You go right ahead.
You'll enjoy this because it's Pat Buchanan and he's just too crazy not to. You gotta let Pat be Pat.
Well, I'm suspicious of your argument, Joan, because I think we have a lot. We've had in the past a lot
this
of
is Chris
Italian
Matthews.
Barbers, and I don't see any problem with that. We have a lot of Mexicans running Mexican restaurants. I don't see the problem. But if you can prove discrimination, I'm with you. Pat,
do you really
it's
not
about
see a problem?
Proving
you
discrimination.
Really
you have to prove it. You can't just assume
well,
it.
We can,
so we
Chris,
think there's something.
Chris,
uniquely Irish Catholic about being
it's
able to fight
tradition.
Fires.
It's called tradition. It's been going on since the 19th century.
And it discriminates
Joan.
Against
Chris,
black people.
Well, wait a minute now, Joan. Now,
it
there
does,
is rank,
Pat.
There is rank and ugly discrimination here, and it's against a man who studied and 13 hours a day, got rid of a second job, listening on tape because he's dyslexic. His dream, his American dream, is taking a test with 70 other guys and coming in the top eight so he can be promoted to lieutenant. He succeeds and wins, and the only reason he's not promoted is because his ancestors came from Italy and this guy is white. This is a rank act of discrimination.
Wait, here it comes. Oh, you're going to love this, Matt. Are you sitting down or are you hanging on to something?
Yes, I'm hanging on.
You know, maybe one of those bite sticks would come in handy because there's going to be screaming in a couple of seconds, and it ain't going to be Pat Buchanan.
Bated breath, my friend.
It's going to be you and me.
Very
which is an
case.
Outrage, and it's not a tough case at all. It's a simple case. You denied the guy a job he deserved.
I didn't.
Fought for and worked for because he's a white man.
And a black firefighter in San Francisco was served dog food at his firehouse just a couple of years ago, Pat, not 20
so
years
what?
Ago.
I mean, it was, nobody's saying that's a good
so
thing.
What?
So what? Like I
so
said,
what?
Yeah, chomp, wait. Chomp down on that bite stick. We're not done yet.
Telling me what they did to Frank
so
Ricky
what?
Is a good thing?
No, I'm
yeah,
not.
I'm saying...
I said that from the beginning. I don't think it's a good thing. I don't think it was fair. I think these are very ugly cases that have very ugly outcomes where basically everyone is harmed. The city of New Haven hasn't had new blood in its leadership because they can't even, they're choosing not to make these promotions. So I think everybody who looks at this case knows that there's something wrong with
it. Comes.
But I don't
sure.
think we can lose sight of what the history is. And when
we
we've
it.
Had affirmative action that has elevated African Americans to leadership mm-hmm. positions in my city
yeah.
of San Francisco. They're wonderful firefighters.
Right,
they're great
right,
leaders, and they do
fine.
A terrific job.
That is fine as long as if you give them a test, they win it fair and square. And the test is fair. There is no evidence this test was unfair. Brian Weber down in Louisiana didn't get a promotion. White working class guy, even though he came out ahead. Alan Backey out there trying to get into medical school, one of the last guys, an older guy, denied it. What is happening now to white men right now is exactly what was done to black folks for years.
No.
Screen. What is happening now to white men right now is exact is what was done to black folks for years.
Sigh. Yes, that's my Al Gore sigh.
You know, you just want to look at it. Yeah, go die, Pat. Just take your generation of hate and bigotry and ignorance and fear and go die.
Pat. You are the proof of evolution because you are a fossil.
Amen.
He is a fossil.
I mean, they are coming plumb unglued, Matt.
That's the funny thing about this period, this moment in our American political history. Okay, we've elected Barack Obama, and it drives them nuts. It drives them absolutely bonkers. So here they are, the Republicans, the conservatives, the paleoconservatives, and what are they doing? You see it at these tea parties, and I've talked about this in my blog. They've become, I call it the teabag terror. They are having to speak to and rely on this fringe, because it's all that's left to them. This fringe element, these guys with these offensive signs at these rallies, that's all that's left to them for a demographic. And what they don't realize is that this is not a formula for growth. This is not a formula for a future for the Republican Party. And hey, I believe firmly in having more than one party. I think it's vitally
important. It would be nice if one of them was marginally sane, the other one that is.
Exactly. It would be nice if the Republicans would turn sane. But did you see Mark Pence yesterday with Chris Matthews? Did you see that?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Okay. Chris Matthews asked him whether he believes in evolution. He couldn't come out and say it. Pence could not come out and say it because he knew he would be offending his wingnut base. So what does he do? He tries to paraphrase scripture. It's painful to watch. And it's so painful to watch these guys, that the moderate Republicans, what's left of them, they have to move further right because that's where their base is. That's what their base is demanding. They're going crazy because they think that they're living in the last days. That's what they really honestly think. They think they're living in the last days of democracy. You go in these chat rooms and you listen, you watch the, you read the words of these conservatives, these folks, these Republicans, these crazy right-wingers. They're putting on the tinfoil hats because they think Barack Obama is going to bring about the end of the United States. He's going to bring about the end.
Exactly. I know you work and stuff, but that's what I opened the show with last night. He's 110, 105 days into his administration, and I watched some grizzled old white geezer in the grocery store yesterday say, I sure hope these people voted for that Barack Obama are happy with what they've done to America.
That's exactly their way of thinking. I see it this way. I think 2010 is going to be an electoral disaster for the Republicans.
But well, yeah, and by the way, you mentioned Mike Pence. You mentioned Mike Pence, and I think you're right. I hope it is an electoral disaster. And maybe that's the Jedi mind trick that Obama's been playing with this, playing footsie and being nice and shaking hands. The right-wingers got all upset about him shaking hands with Hugo Chavez. I'm getting real pissed off about him shaking hands with Bill Kristol.
Good point.
But there's that. It may be a total train wreck for him, and I hope it is. But as far as Mike Pence is concerned, I was real nasty to the fundamentalist minister earlier. I mean, I was really hateful and mean, screamed at him and stuff, called him a monster, told him that I'd sit outside the gates of hell with ice cubes and tease him once he was in. The thing is, the Mike Pences of the world go on shows and stuff, and they get treated with kid gloves. You know, when he was having trouble with evolution, Matt, the answer to the way you deal with that problem with him having trouble saying, well, yeah, evolution's real, is just to look at him and saying, well, look, okay, Congressman Pence, I've got a paper right here. I'll send it to you, and you can sign it. You'll have it notarized, so it'll be a sworn affidavit, and it'll be legal and everything. And I want you to swear that if for some reason the Smithfield flu should get so bad that you need an inoculation, that you won't take it. Because you don't believe in evolution.
That's
and every last bit of science on which the making of these vaccines is predicated is based on evolutionary biology and based on the fact that virus strains evolve. So I need you, being a disbeliever in evolution, a denier of evolution, I need you to swear that you will not participate or take into your body anything that is a product of evolution. When you start feeling that tightness in your chest, Congressman, and like Richard Pryor said, when you go to take a breath and your heart says, "Don't breathe, mother," I don't want you having any medicine done because it's all based on evolution, Congressman. What I want you to do is call one of these right-wing preachers you're so damn fond of and let them come lay hands on your ass. And then we'll have a lovely funeral for you. But you got to walk the walk if you're going to talk the talk, Congressman.
We'll do an empirical study. We'll line all of you up with your swine flu. We'll all get the vaccine, and then we'll see how that works.
Yeah, and Smithfield flu, by the way. Since we're not supposed to call it swine, since the pork industry doesn't want us to call it swine flu anymore, we're supposed to call it H1N1. No, I'm calling it the Smithfield flu because those are the sorry bastards that brought it to us. But I got to roll on, Matt. We've run out of time. This has been a joy. I hope you'll make a habit of it.
You know, I want to make a habit of it. My work schedule has me working during this period of time 4 out of 5 days, so I will be back probably on Wednesdays.
Cool. Sounds good. We'll talk soon, Matt.
All right, man. You take care.
All right. Bye now.
Bye-bye.
That's our good buddy Matt Osborne of Osborne, Inc., OSBORNEINK.com, OSBORNEINK.com, and South of Strange, just like it sounds, SouthofStrange.com. Both of them excellent websites, and he's a fantastic writer. Go and give him some hits and let him see some, let him see a little bit of love on the website there, and you will be glad you did. The Torture of Rush Limbaugh, I have read it all the way through, and it's damn brilliant. It really is. And it raises a whole bunch of questions like what we were talking about there. So we're going to wrap up. It's about 9 minutes before the hour. And just another one of those moments of insanity that I kind of got to share. Do you remember this? Do you remember this from last Christmas season? The little wads of dancing, singing coal carolers?
Frosty the Coal Man is a jolly, happy soul. He's abundant here in America, and he helps our economy roll. Frosty the Coal Man's getting cleaner every day. He's affordable and adorable, and workers keep their pay. There must have been some magic in clean coal technology.
Yeah, the only problem is he's not helping the workers keep their pay anymore, seeing as how there are even more layoffs today. Or, of course, that's the environmentalist's fault. The same geniuses who brought you the clean coal carolers have been at it again, and they're really getting all hip and keen and bee's knees with that new computer and telephone technology. That's right. Clean coal has ringtones for you. I wish the heck I was lying.
West Virginia coal, gonna take you on a ride. Gonna take you to the city, to the shore and countryside. Gonna let you work your magic and your power and your pride. West Virginia coal, you're on your way.
When we go down deep through the dark today, we come up with a light for America. America!
Yeah, for some reason or other, that's the bluegrass mix. The West Virginia Men's Coal Chorus or something. No, really, these are ringtones. They're giving them away for free. You can have a West Virginia coal ringtone on your phone, but you've got lots of choices. There's a choir.
When we go down deep through the dark today, we come up with a light.
Is irony lost on these people entirely when we go down deep? Just saying. I don't know. I'm not into the choir, and I don't care much for the bluegrass mix. Maybe I'm more of a New Orleans mix kind of guy.
Cold is West Virginia. Cold is me and you. Cold is West Virginia. We've got a job. Cold is energy.
You know, that's a New Orleans mix the way Broadway musicals are rock and roll. Who did they hire? Bill Murray from his Saturday Night Live Lounge Lizard? Star Wars, nothing but Star Wars, don't let them end, to do this for them?
And see, it's going to be a patriotic requirement in West Virginia to have one of these on your phone. Let's try the Mountain Mix.
Call with West Virginia. Call with me and you. Call with West Virginia. We've got a job to do.
I've been around a lot of music in West Virginia, and none of it has ever sounded like a Broadway show tune with a production number, you know, chorus and stuff. I'm not going to ruin the end of the program by talking about how offended I am by the idea of Coal is West Virginia. Hard work is West Virginia. Blood, sweat, toil, and tears are West Virginia. A deep and abiding desire. Well, like I said in the article that was published at the Daily Yonder and picked up at Common Dreams, West Virginians, Appalachian people, have elevated to an art the ability of doing much with nothing, of making bricks without straw, because that's what a mono economy does to you. But you know what? Just as they were willing to spit on the spirit of Christmas with their coal carols, let's see, we've had the male voice choir.
When we go down deep.
Oh, there they are going down again. We've had the New Orleans mix. We've had the Mountain Mix. You know, my Mountain Mix usually has raisins and little the raw peanuts and coconut flakes and stuff in it, but never mind. We've had the bluegrass mix that I can't tell much different from the Mountain Mix. It is prayer meeting. It would only be fitting to end with the clean coal ringtone gospel mix.
Coal is West Virginia.
Well, I'm uplifted. These people are completely, utterly, totally clueless. Yeah. Wow. I'm left almost speechless. God help me if I'm somewhere and I hear that on someone's telephone. I'm liable to get all just loopy and crazy. Coal ringtones, as if we didn't have enough coal stuff. Disgusting. So that's the end of the program. That's the end of what has been a very busy prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid. Thanks for joining me. Again, if I offended anybody by breaking all bad on that right-wing freak on Radio Inside Scoop with Mark Levine, I apologize. It was not my intent. See, that's how you apology. I'm not apologizing to you if you were offended. If I offended you, I apologize. See, that's how you do it for the right-wingers who may be listening. But that's the program. Thanks. And you know who you are, who keep this network going by your kind contributions. It's humbling beyond all comprehension. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com, as is the address if you choose to use snail mail. Thanks to Peter Godbold, our IT professional. I wish he could have heard me chewing on that fundy. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer, chief musician, webmaster, web designer, and host of All Foxed Up Sunday nights at 9 p.m. once he gets his computer fixed. Thanks to the hardest working, most overworked man in liberal talk, Ben Birch. WhiteRoseSociety.org. Nothing happens here and gets out to the world without a heck of a lot of hard work by Ben, and he never sends a bill. Thanks to Horn intern junior grade Ferg, and thanks to him for sharing with you this evening. And I hope you got some sense of how difficult it is to do that sort of thing for a young man like him. Thanks to our friends, the bravest, hardest working people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, crmw.net, and coldriverwind.org. They never give up and they never will, because they know we're all downwind and we're all downstream. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you.